Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, the 24th day of March, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, where at this moment, all at you doing nothing more than entering a screen name and a password, you will be joined by Earther and Laborman and Man Cave and Soapbox Geezer and Texas Tea. Of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky has, being a third stage guild navigator, folded space to become Man Cave. Yes. So jump right in. More folks will be along presently. We don't stand on ceremony here. We don't have a little bell. There are no penalties for tardiness. Just, you know, wander by when you get a chance and join in the merriment and the mirth-making and the madcap real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. This is, I also am compelled to remind us all, but you already know this, this is a little broadcast operation that runs on the goodwill of listeners. We try to raise $200 a night to keep all the bills paid. We are more than three-quarters of the way through, well, I guess you could say we're exactly three-quarters of the way through the month of March, and we find ourselves in a hole that is $685 deep. Goodness gracious sakes alive. That's a, you know, that's a great way to not have an independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting operation anymore. So we need to raise, oh dear God, I hate numbers like this. Well, one at $685 or two at $34.50 or, no, $345. Yeah, there we go. And well, you get the idea. It's complicated because it's a big number, $685. But it's been a tough fundraising month. We've been in constant catch-up mode all along. But yeah, we got $685 to raise and a whole bunch of bills yet to pay. So that's where it is. The PayPal interface, of course, is over at headonradionetwork.com. You click the tab Contribute. You fill out the little form there. You can leave those blanks blank about what you do for Mr. Tate down at McMahon and Tate, the advertising agency, and you just get to the next screen, and that's where you make all your choices. But yes, we got $685 to raise. And those kind of numbers just, well, they make my liver quiver. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. Will in Chicago and Stockton Larry have joined us in the chat room. Good evening, good evening, good evening. Let's see, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, the mailing address. Yes, yes, yes. If you don't like PayPal and you prefer to participate and help keep the program on the air by virtue of the U.S. Postal Service, you can always go to, the checks and money orders may be mailed to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And rest assured that Boss Man Wayne does his dead level best to make sure that we get that mail and the Klan doesn't, because after all, The Klan, the National Knights of the Old Order of the True Believers of the Grand Kleagel Dragon, whatever. They use the same UPS stores we do. Still haven't figured out who the Klansman in question is. And of course, the for-profit media around here are useless as teats on a boar hog. In sorting that out as well. But never mind. But if you want to participate, and remember, make checks and money orders payable, not to Bob Kincaid, but to the Horn. And that way, Boss Man Wayne can take it and send it all down to our financial institution for bill-paying purposes. Thank you very kindly. And if you send me a note and say something's on the way, I can always tell Boss Man Wayne that he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck as he reaches into the echo chamber that is usually the Horn post office box. Okay. So it's Thorn in the Side Thursday here. Little Gray in the chat room noting, sorry for the Java update-inspired delay in getting here. It happens to the best of us. I had a Java update-inspired delay myself. Someday they'll figure out how to make a chat room that doesn't run on Java. And good evening to Trey as well. Good evening, Trey, in the chat room. More folks wandering by. A little bit of sad news to report as we begin the program before we get into the meat of Thorn in the Side Thursday. Gary Shandling has died. He was 66 years old, died in L.A. No official statements on cause of death, although TMZ is reporting that he had a heart attack. Funny man, and will be much missed. Yes. Now, Thorn in the Side Thursday. You know, we dedicate this to what happens when right-wingers try to think big thoughts. Think. You know, like Pooh Bear. Think. Because they are, generally speaking, bears of very small brain. Extremely small, microscopically small, microcephalus. Yes. And we have examples of that. Now I know that there are a lot of people who swear up and down that they will not vote for Hillary Clinton in November, no matter what, come what may. There are Republicans out there who are doing their very best to try to make that not happen. Mm-hmm. Among other things, as an inducement for you to vote for Hillary Clinton, if indeed she is the nominee in November, former Texas congressman and a guy who vied with people like Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Steve Cantaloupe's King for title of the biggest right-wing nut job in the history of the House, has promised that he will leave the United States of America if Hillary Clinton becomes the president of the United States. I know, it's probably not enough inducement for you, but I did want to let you know that it was out there on the table. Yes, Gerald, exactly. Oh, bother. That's what happens when right-wingers try to think. And by way of further inducement, yeah, how about this? Let's keep things in order here. Down in North Carolina stan, where Art Pope's pet governor, Pat McCrory, holds forth in the governing business. Remember, he's a former coal-fired energy executive. But the legislature in North Carolina got to legislating, which is what legislatures do. Sometimes they're not very good at it. I mean, for instance, as I have mentioned before, the legislature here in West Virginia, which has one job, everything else is ancillary. They got one job, pass a budget. And over the course of 6 weeks, the dumbass teabaggers couldn't even do that. Yep. They are stupid with a capital stu. Yes, And now the governor of the state of West Virginia is going to have to call them back into a special session and cost the already in an $850 million budget deficit people of West Virginia more money to pay their dead asses to come down there. And I don't know, maybe along the way they'll pass a bill for free-range yogurt or something like that. But they're going to have to... But, you know, I got to thinking about that. Yeah, and really, trust me, we'll get there. It's thorn in the side Thursday. We got 2 hours and 50 minutes. I got to thinking, the governor, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, is going to call a special session. And I found myself wondering if maybe a little political hardball might be in order. The governor, I don't think, it's been a while since I've seen the statute, but the governor is not incumbent upon the governor. It is not a shall or a must situation. The governor may call a special session of the legislature. May meaning it is a function of his gubernatorial prerogative. But these stupid fuckers, and I want to make sure that I use technical terms correctly, and I think where the teabaggers of the West Virginia legislature is concerned, stupid fuckers is the appropriate technical term. Yeah, where they're concerned, they had 6 months. They had 6 whole weeks to pass a budget. Yeah, during which time they argued over potty bills, and argued over whether or not they could, whether or not religious freedom was dying in West Virginia if some cake baker up a holler somewhere had to bake a cake for a gay marrying couple, because you can be gay married in West Virginia now. A lot of times. And then there was the raw milk bill and the, hey, why doesn't everybody carry a gun around here bill? You know, in your pocket, in your back pocket, front pocket, you know, tucked into the waistband of your pants, you know, in your Freedom Protector purse, your Freedom Protector bra, whatever. Okay, and by the way, this is a capitalist question. This is a marketing question. Women have a Freedom Protector bra. Has capitalism not caught up yet with the fact that men need a Freedom Protector jockstrap? I mean, what could be more sexy time than feeling that blue steel of a deadly weapon down there in a special pocket in your jockstrap? Now, granted, we're talking about right wingers here, so it might have to be a very small pocket. But never mind. You get the idea. But I was wondering if Gert. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Gerald. Gerald is a longtime knower of words, and he does reassure me here. Yes, Bob, you are using the term stupid fuckers in its proper context, in where we're talking about the West Virginia legislature. Yeah. But I got to wonder, what would happen? I mean, we know what would happen. But why shouldn't the governor of this state let these stupid fuckers stew in their own juices? Really, why shouldn't he? They didn't want to do a budget. They had no interest in one. So, let it go. Let them figure a way to call themselves back into session. Let them sort the mess out that they made. Yes, the state will go bust. But in the case of, you know, states can't print money like a federal government can. Maybe that would be the best, most surefire way to get the federal government to come in here and fix this failed state. Because, make no mistake, it is a failed state, West Virginia. Maybe that's worth investigating. I mean, it's not like the legislature could impeach Gert for not calling him into a special session, because they can't go into a special session without being called by the governor. So, you know, fuck you, buddy. You had 6 weeks, 6 whole weeks to get a budget done. And instead, you pissed around and played with yourself and did things to make the Koch brothers happy and did things to make the religion industry happy and did things to make Alec happy and the Republican Party happy and the churchy people happy. But you couldn't do a butt, so, you know, fuck right, fuck the fuckity fuck off. Now, that does mean a lot of bad things will happen. And I know how to remedy that. You fix it in November. But anyway, just an observation. He doesn't have to do that. 8 weeks, sorry, not 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Thank you, Gerald, thank you. Now, meanwhile, back in North Carolina, which I mentioned a moment ago, Governor Pat McCrory, the pet governor of a pissant billionaire by the name of Art Pope, has signed a bill. You remember how the Republican Party used to all be about small government and local control and states' rights? Remember that? I do too. Well, now in the state of North Carolina, no local government, no city, no county, no municipality, no metro combined government, nothing, can pass any law that lets transgender people go potty in the restroom that matches their gender identities. It really. There was a one-day special session in Raleigh because Charlotte, North Carolina, which is North Carolina's largest city and which has a large cosmopolitan and diverse population, had passed a human rights ordinance. And so they were called back into special session because, you know, at least those dumbass Republicans managed to pass a budget such as it was. And, you know, some voter suppression and that kind of stuff. But they had a one-day special session to invalidate the law in Charlotte. And as quick as the bill got to his desk, Pat McCrory said, "This law in Charlotte defies common sense. The basic expectation of privacy in the most personal settings, a restroom, a locker room for each gender, was violated by government overreach and intrusion by the mayor and city council of Charlotte." Republican Representative Paul Stamm jumped in and said, "Oh, this is a common sense bill that protects the privacy expectations of our citizens while clarifying local authority." Well, of course, that I guess that means transgender people in North Carolina are not deemed to be citizens and are not deemed to be have an expectation of privacy. You know, this is going to get real interesting real quick. So now, transgendered, male to female transgenders have to go to the men's room. Which means that we're going to have to, in North Carolina and other places, we're going to have some potty police. Because if somebody is sitting down in a stall, somebody's going to have to find out if they're, yeah, I mean, because, you know, you better be pooping in there, not peeing. You can't be peeing sitting down in here because this is a men's restroom, you know, real men, you know. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know. Because that's what matters. And that's what matters. So they're standing up to the tyranny of the toilet there in North Carolina. And since trans people don't have equal rights now in North Carolina, One wonders how the business community will respond. Because, of course, a few days ago, the National Football League, the No Fun League, sent a little message down to the state of Georgia, Stan, where they were considering a religious freedom bill. And by the way, just while we're at it, where did this whole Religious Freedom Restoration Act business come from? Where'd that start? Oh, yeah, it's another one of those things we can put on the list of really awesome shit that Bill Clinton did. Thanks, Bill. Thanks a lot. That's some legacy you built up there. The awful legacy of those 8 years. Huh? Yeah. But anyway, the NFL reached out to Georgia and said, if you're going to be passing discrimination laws, you know, those were some nice Super Bowls you had there in the Georgia Dome, but don't expect to be having any more. So it remains to be seen whether or not that will have any impact on the decision-making of a whole bunch of right-wing dickheads, yes. And whatever you call right-wing lady people. But nonetheless, with bombs going off around the world, with people being shot, with people starving, with massive human migration crises all over the place, we know what matters. Yeah, Arthur, that's a great idea. Arthur in the chat room says, I think every stall should have a keypad where you enter a sex, and as you sit, a laser scanner checks if you were honest. Hi, Bob. Hi, Arthur. That's a great idea. And maybe you can get a little zap if it turns out you're a lion. Sinner. But anyway, with all the crises all over the planet, at least we know that the evangelical fundamentalist, Christ-centered, Bible-believing, Bible-thumping but not reading, yeah, those people have their ducks completely in a row. Witness the latest from Michael the Savage Wiener, Savage, to wit, what's going to happen to Merca if an Hillary gets to be president. Because, see, there are two Hillarys out there. Hashtag which Hillary. There are two Hillarys out there. There's the real Hillary, who is a center-right politician who doesn't believe in big systemic changes, who, for instance, says, well, maybe medical marijuana would be okay, but we still need to study it some more, but we can't have people out there running around smoking legal weed. You know, that Hillary. You know, the Hillary who says never, ever when we talk about universal single-payer health care. That Hillary. And then there's the Hillary that lives perpetually in the minds of the right wing. The white wing. Who have been so busy hating Hillary for so long that it's not even the same Hillary anymore. Like I said, savage. Oh, wait, works better if I do this. Oh, hang on here. Gotta go back to the beginning. Here we go.
For the like-minded folks like us that could actually make a living and innovate and do their own
Well, it's a great novel, you know, and it was a predecessor to that novel by Aldous Huxley called Brave New World. You know it?
I do.
Well, who was one of the survivors in Brave New World who fled to a secret location to build a resistance against this? It was a man named Savage. Do you remember that?
I do.
The Savage Nation, the last refuge for people hungry for the truth. But you fear we'd have an armed rebellion after 3 years of Hillary. Is that your fear? She'll seize guns, you know that. Because she fears that as well. You know that as well. She is an absolute dictator. She will seize guns and make them illegal in any way necessary. She'll either make ammunition outlawed. And you know what happens? I heard from this gentleman from South Africa who has the guns, that guns are outlawed in South Africa. Take a guess who has guns in South Africa now that guns are outlawed in South Africa. The criminals have guns. Do you know that?
No.
Everything we've been saying, that if you take guns away from the law-abiding citizen, the only people left with guns are the criminals. Is that not commonsensical? Everybody knows that except the leftists who keep repeating the same big lie. Take away guns and there'll be less violence. Take away guns, there'll be less violence. A complete and total lie. The only thing that scares a burglar more than a burglar alarm is an armed resident. So you fear, as I do, that she's the worst of the pack. Is that what you're saying?
I think Bernie's worse than Hillary, but Hillary, you know, a communist by any other name, you know, she may not be out there portraying herself as a quote-unquote social, you know, democratic socialist, but she wears the same color. It's red.
Right. Well, let me make a little statement on the Savage Nation, which you can mark down for this day. What is today's date? March what? I don't even know. March who are we? March what? 8th. Okay. Listen to me on the Savage Nation. Today is the 8th of March in the year 2016.
Yeah, okay. I think we've got that nailed down. Hillary's a communist. You know how much I wish Hillary was a communist? Or even a democratic socialist. But she's not. She's not even remotely. Not even a little bit. Teeny, tiny, itsy bitsy. No! She's a center-right Gaga Democrat. Go along, get along. There's nothing bold or dynamic. Pragmatic progressive, right? Now, I'm not slamming her. I'm not bashing her. I'm talking about what she is. Because these goddamn fools think that she's Leon Trotsky in a dress. Which raises the issue of which restroom Leon Trotsky would use if Leon Trotsky was in a dress, but nope, never mind. But there may be some of that here, too. Hold on.
I'll make a prediction. If Hillary becomes president, financially nothing will change in the country because she's part of the Wall Street crowd. She is Wall Street. So fiscally, the country will not change very much, incidentally. Socially, a meltdown. It'll look like a bad university. It will look like socially a meltdown.
It will look like a bad university? Anybody got a point of reference for that? Because that's a simile that's not working for me. But it's going to be a bad university.
Look like a bad university. It will look like socially a meltdown, a social nightmare. There'll be a transgender in your soup. I'll be right back.
Don't hurry. There will be... Now, damn it! It's 28 minutes past the hour, the first hour of the program, and I'm already sitting here thinking... Either him or me, somebody needs a Thorazine dart in the neck, really. There will be a transgender in your soup? Waiter, there's a transgender in my soup. What's she doing? The breaststroke? Ah! There will be a transgender in your soup. I got nothing. I mean, there are some things that are such platonic ideals, and this is the platonic ideal of stupid, that you got nothing. If she weighs the same as a duck, she's transgendered, and therefore... Hillary Clinton will put her in your soup. Have I got it? Because I'm afraid I've got it. I don't think I've got it. I'm afraid I've got it. I'm scared that I've got it. This is some significantly painful stupid. I mean, this is some real thorn in the side Thursday thornage. Ah, a bad university. Thank you, Carol Baker. Liberty U. There's one. Oh, and I've got some liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit. So is every, I mean, Carol asked a minute ago with the thing with North Carolina, can't I just go into the ladies' room and present my cooter card? It's got a picture and everything. Made it myself. Kind of proud. It's a smiling Cat Stevens. Cat Stevens, her cat, not Cat Stevens. No. How do you move on from? There will be a transgender soup. Yeah, okay. As Gerald notes there, I believe I hear the exact same shit about guns when that one was running for president. He better get his shit in gear. He's only got 9 months left. Transgender in my soup. But why? What? Yeah, oh well. Hey, let's run over to the phones for a minute. Hey, welcome to the program.
Howdy, Bob.
That bell can only mean one thing. That's Reverbo.
Come on down and pick up the keys to your new Buick.
Boy, I tell you, I want the blue one.
You bet you do. Well, that was pretty damn stupid, wasn't it?
How often, this is beautiful having you ring in and everything. Cause, I mean, I'm just about rendered speechless, transgender in your soup.
Oh, God. Even ringing in once every 6 years. Some of this.
You can sure pick them.
Yeah, well. So, thorn in your side Thursday. So, is Bernie Sanders that thorn?
I think he is for a lot of people. I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz probably swears at him in her sleep. And I don't know, like the scene from Young Frankenstein, you know, Hillary's there in bed, destiny, no escaping that for me. Bernie! Maybe.
One of the reasons you haven't heard from me in so long, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one is that my level of dismay has just increased and disillusionment has just increased. Yeah, it's always amusing to observe stupid, but I just had a birthday recently, and I made it, Bob. I made it to 65.
Oh, jumping Jesus, yeah. Really?
Incredible. And I don't know. The writing's just been on the wall. I don't want to get off the phone tonight and leave everybody, just in a real downer mood. But I think I've just withdrawn. I just don't see. I really have a tough time imagining that anything is going to really change. And that's not good for your ratings to have a caller sitting on and talk like this.
It's even worse for my ratings to have a host who feels that way. I mean, what do you want?
I heard you utter several weeks ago that something similar to that, and you know that at that point you got to start thinking about maybe you will start exploring that ping pong on a professional level and get out of radio.
Right. The senior ping pong circuit. It could be a thing.
It could be a huge thing. Well, huge, as Donald would say. But it just got to be. I don't know. I was excited in 2008. I was recently retired, and here I was captivated by Obama and that. And that particular election was really fun to get to dive into, and especially the primary race, because that was the close one against, you know, against Hillary. The general election, well, you had to feel sorry for poor John McCain, you know, the night that they knock on his door and they, with the news that they found a running mate for him, and oh, by the way, you're not going to ever be spending the night in the White House. See you later.
No, no, John, we found you a running mate, and well, John, you're screwed, John.
Yeah, we never really were serious about this.
Did you think we were serious, John? Because John, we weren't serious. Think about the rabbits, John. Think about the rabbits.
God, that poor guy. And then you know, and it's not that I Obama is an intelligent man. There's no question about it. But the problem with him, this is, you know, a lot of people would recognize this. He's just idealistic to a fault, and he never got the picture. He never understood that they were serious about sitting down in the middle of the road and not budging.
Yeah, but Reverbo, I think the light has finally gone on. I don't know if you noticed it or not, but did you catch what he said about Rafaelito Cruz the other day?
Fill me in on this.
Okay, so immediately after the explosions in Brussels, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, declared that that what we have to do is we've got to put military-style police into our Muslim neighborhoods. His term, Muslim neighborhoods. Because he was just melting down. These right wingers are the biggest bunch of cowards that have come down the pike in ages. And bless his heart, there in Cuba, where he was being roundly excoriated for, you know, not coming rushing home, yelling "Bruga Bruga, ISIS is a coming, ISIS is a coming," but instead staying in Cuba, Barack Obama responded by saying, "Well, you know, I find it interesting that Rafael Cruz's father escaped from a nation that had exactly that, armed police in every neighborhood, and he fled for freedom in America." And it's like, whoa, you just burnt him right down to the ground now, didn't you?
Wow.
Yeah, nothing.
How tough is it to burn him down to the ground?
Well, I mean, he's made of wax. Rafael Cruz is made of wax.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was excellent. No one's going to vote. He's not going to spend it. The only way he'll spend a night in the White House is if he gets too drunk to drive home and he's there, got invited to dinner. I mean, he's not going to. No, who's going to vote for him?
And you know, Trump? I mean, I remember back in 1992 when a lot of people looked at Ross Perot and said, "Well, you know, he might be a little loopy, but he's making some points here." You know, the big sucking sound and all of that.
Hey, you're singing to the choir here. I had to carry that man's charts around. You remember that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I remember
he had a lot of charts.
I remember some lovely voyages among the upon the Silver Pelican there a few years back.
He and I got very close.
Yeah, it was a good guy, Ross.
He is.
But now, you know, we're down. It's just a reality show, Reverbo.
It's too bad that Trump isn't more fun, because he really would try to get stuff done. It's just what stuff.
Right, and now
I don't think he's totally unintelligent either.
No, I don't think he's an idiot. I think he knows who he's talking to, and he talks like his audience, because he talks to them like kindergartners, and that's about the level. That's about the level of discourse. But it's middle school, Reverbo. I mean now it's down to the point where the two guys, Cruz and Trump, are flinging insults at each other's spouses.
Well, Mrs. Trump is so beautiful that it ought to be illegal, you know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I think there's no doubt that were she to be first lady, Melanoma Trump would be the hottest first lady that has ever inhabited the White House since at least, Dolly Madison.
And that's going to generate a few votes among our reddish-necked, drunk supporters. Oh, God. Well, I mean, once again, you just have to assume that I love what Trump is doing. I love that they're just tearing up that party. That's what they deserve. But they're quite capable of continuing to wreak havoc in this country by not occupying the White House. So.
They don't
need the White House.
And they figured that out. They didn't want it in 2008. And, in 2008, I was saying it, Roberto, you remember. The Republicans don't really want the White House because there's nothing to steal. Now after 8 years of a Democrat, we've got the economy. Wall Street sizzling along at plus 17,000. There's stuff now that's worth that's worth boosting. And Ernie down at the old Hawk and Pawn. He's just waiting. He's just waiting for Ted Cruz to come through with the pillowcase. But they don't have. But you're right. They don't. They don't have to. They don't have to have a legislature. I mean, they don't have to have the White House. They can wreck the place just fine from Congress.
Yeah, and so can the Democrats. But the only good thing I can say about the Democrats is at least, as far as I know, they didn't have a secret meeting where they actually, spelled out this strategic, political agenda of no compromise and no deals with the other side. If they had, I certainly wasn't.
Oh, no. When the Supreme Court appointed George W. Bush president, the only secret meeting the Democrats had was to determine how often they were going to roll over on their backs to get their bellies scratched. Which they then proceeded to do.
So I'm sick of this. To get back to one of the big reasons I call, I'm tired of this, Bob. I'm tired of having to vote. Well, people say, you just got to start small, and that's the way to do it. You get progressives, you get good people elected to, school boards and county commissions and state legislatures and this kind of thing. I don't know, Good luck with that, because all I really see since I've been able to vote, and that's been since 1972, I mean, I just see a lot of little victories and a lot of big, big defeats. I'm just getting pretty much too, it's just getting tiresome. I mean, and then I was thinking, you look at Bernie Sanders, but Bernie's nothing new. Before Bernie, there was someone, and no disrespect to Senator Sanders, but there was Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader's been talking about this shit for 50 years in a little more, even more articulate way than Bernie has. You want to talk about only the super rich can save us, and corporate welfare and perpetual war and class warfare and everything that we... That is wrong. Shit, Nader's been talking like that for years and years.
I remember it was you who, long before anybody else started using the phrase, it was you, Reverbo, who said, you said that we needed the kind of disclaimer on American so-called democracy that comes with automobile ads. Your experience may vary.
Oh, exactly. It might. It may vary. In fact, when you do look, analyze, say, the Bernie Sanders fan base, they're the group whose experiences sadly have varied the most. And it validates his entire platform. That's the group, the students and the minorities and the women, and, well, the middle class. I want to qualify that. Anybody who has had a brain. You know,
those people that we used to call the middle class when we had one.
Right. But those people are precisely the ones that the oligarchs don't count around here. So, you know, they found their guy, and he found his supporters, and I just, but whatever happens with this, you know what happens. You keep people ignorant, and then it's very easy to demonize good ideas and to just ultimately reject them. And that seems to be what always happens.
You touched on something there talking about the people who support Bernie. Isn't it at the very least ironic, Reverbo, that the people who have been screwed the hardest in this country are the ones who, in this case, believe the most fiercely that it can be fixed, that it can be better? I mean, doesn't that strike you as a little bit, if not ironic, maybe counterintuitive?
I'm going to give you a thing on that because you used irony in the correct way.
Well, thank you.
Irony is a tricky word. A lot of people don't know exactly how to use it. But, yes, I do find that ironic. These are the people who have the most, they've lost the most. And they seem to be the optimistic ones. They haven't thrown in the towel.
Well, is that because they don't have the means to say, fuck it, I'm going somewhere else? We've got to either make it better or die trying? Is that it? Or do they really, really believe that this is a system that can work for everybody?
Oh boy. See, now you're making me feel a little guilty because yeah, there's a lot to what you just said. And so now I have to rethink my position. And I've been thinking...
Well, that happens in conversation radio, Reverbo.
Oh, God. And I've been thinking that I kind of like it here. I mean, here, where I'm at.
Your sort of existential space.
In that sense, yeah, that I don't... As a matter of fact, I was talking to my wonderful girlfriend about this. And neither of us.
And she
really
is wonderful, by the way. She is.
She is, and I'm going to tell you what I'm going to have for dinner tonight too. Before we hang up, and you'll be, and we can reset her wonderfulness with what I'm going to tell you. But we don't want to go back. This is good. I don't want to go back and make the same stupid mistakes I made before, because no doubt I would. This is good right here. I'm still fairly healthy and active. I'm pretty pleased with the wisdom I've accrued. I don't want to get any older. We could just stall here. That would be good. And I certainly don't want to live to be, 211. What they say people may end up being able to do.
You were the first one to put me onto Richard K. Morgan, and I'm still trying to figure out a way to become a Methuselah. So, you know.
Oh God. Well, I don't want to. You can do that if you want. I don't want to do that. But I don't want to. I want to stall right here. That would be good. But sadly, now I have to start imagining myself in the shoes of people who don't have any other place to go and who may not like it where they're at. And every day is another day where they think, why can't we make this work for everybody? And that used to be that was my catalyst too for a while, but I guess I just started, you don't have to go back far. There's red flags everywhere. It's easy for them. It's easy for them to demonize it because nobody has any sort of historical or political context to our country anymore. I mean, look at this shit. Look at these things that still have legs that make no sense. Let's see a brief list here. How about the rich create jobs? How about they're going to take away your guns? How about there's a war on Jesus? How about there's such a thing as clean coal? et cetera, et cetera.
How about cutting taxes increases revenues?
This was debunked eons ago. But it seems like people just don't. They don't even remember what the hell happened 4 years ago, and so you can just trump them into. I don't know. I'm dismayed, Bob. I'm too dismayed anymore.
Can I tell you a little story real quick, Reverbo?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I was down at the Rippy Mart earlier today, and this sort of skeevy looking guy walks in. And he says, and he's got a sheaf of little flyers, and he sticks his hand out to the clerk, and she sticks her hand out, and it's obvious he's got one of those handshakes, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. And he says, is it okay if I leave political materials here? Is this where I leave them, right here on the counter where everybody will see them? And she said, well, sure, go ahead. Why not? And so he does. And he gives his name, you know, my name is Bill Schmedlep, and I'm running for Board of Education. And you know me, Reverbo. Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't just get a candidate in the Rippy Mart every day. So I looked at him and said, what's your party? And he said, well, it's a nonpartisan election. I said, yeah, I know that. I didn't ask you if it was a nonpartisan election, buddy. I asked you what party you are. Well, I said, are you ashamed? Because if you are, that probably tells me you're a Republican. I'm a Republican who votes like a Democrat.
There's no such thing anymore.
And I just looked at him and said, well, good luck with that. Sure you are.
Really? How's that working out for you?
Sure you are. And at the risk of having them call the town cop and, you know, carry me out with my hand behind, twisted up behind my back, I decided to lay low. But, you know, he's running for Board of Education, which is a nonpartisan office. But I could have told you his life story by asking him two or three questions. Hey, buddy. What do you think of evolution? Hey, buddy, tell me about our coal economy. Hey, buddy, Common Core, what do you think? And any one of those would probably have gotten him frothing at the mouth. Because they're magic words. I mean, they bring out all the brooga-brooga.
You don't need a large multiple choice test for these folks. It's just a few questions.
This isn't highfalutin survey work with chi square and margins of error and stuff. I mean, it's easy. And I only bring this up because all those buzzwords that drive right wingers crazy, there's no way that you could adhere to them, Reverbo. If you had even a scintilla of knowledge of history and culture and politics and, you know, all those stuff that we call the liberal arts.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't. I mean, if you understand the history of the United States, you don't pretend that things are any more nasty politically now than they've been for, you know, 200 plus years. 238 years. 39. Because it's been nasty all along. And it's been a constant struggle just to get a little, just to drag a little bit of dignity away. When somebody like Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, starts talking about human dignity, and then you realize that this guy used to hand out, maybe he still does, copies of Atlas Shrugged to all of his interns. He's ignorant too. And that's the thing. The ignorance goes all the way to the top.
yes, you can probably, yeah, you can graduate from Yale and just and be ignorant. It's hard to even to start fathoming all of this. How is it super complicated or is it really, really fucking easy? It reminds you of that line that is often misrepresented, or the origin of this line is often misrepresented. People think it's Mencken or somebody, but I think it's Tom Peter, the guy who wrote The Peter Principle, and I'm going to have to paraphrase, you know, you don't know if the people who are in charge are really believe this shit or are just conning you.
And you know, and the only way to find that out is maybe, you know, with sodium pentothal. And nobody's going to strap Rafi Alito down in a chair and let's find out. But, you know, he's putting out stuff that says, well, you know, my cabinet is going to be dedicated to making sure that everybody goes potty where Jesus wants them to.
With him, boy, at the heart, I don't even know where to put him. I guess he really does believe this shit, because that is not going to get him to the White House. So he must be absolutely passionate about this bullshit. No, he must be convinced that he looks around, well, it's not Iran, and it's not, this is some kind of theocracy. I can't, which one is this?
How a few minutes ago you said that making everything better for everybody was kind of your catalyst for a while and it worked for you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people like Rafi Alito, they live in a world where everybody is a Christian and everybody is being persecuted. And so they've got to protect us against that works for them, because everywhere they look, there's a Christian being persecuted.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't? Did you have to bake that cupcake for a homo? Did you? Did you? See, persecution.
Well, that's the only way the whole line towards the baby Jesus works, is if you set it all up like that. Anyway. You can't. Otherwise, that doesn't work. You know, it's funny that if the idea is to what is our purpose in life? If it really is the health and happiness and trying to be a little useful, I certainly don't see religion playing too big of a role in the happiness part. Certainly, as we've seen lately, not in the health part. Anybody's religion.
Well, I mean, right. Nothing's getting singled out here, but they're all based on fear. You know, I have to behave this way, or the all-loving, all-knowing, all-seeing creator of the universe is going to send me to the lake of fire that he prepared for me because I love him so much, and he loves me so much.
Well, that's right.
I mean, talk about dysfunctional.
Well, yeah, it's a substitute guilt for fear, or also they all work because they're trying to instill in everyone a irrational denial of death.
Yeah,
you're not going to really die, because don't worry. We'll see you all. We'll see you later.
Just around the corner.
The other, I've heard you and some other people talk about, and it's not hard to, that Hillary Clinton really doesn't know how to run a political campaign, and she's, besides the fact that she's shrill. And she's so obviously mobbed up with Wall Street and everything. She's just getting it wrong. And I've been thinking, and you may have been thinking this too, you know, Bernie, I think, has gotten too caught up in, he's hanging himself a little bit because he doesn't know how to present the whole socialist story, the whole story of socialism to people. And, well, the reason it's difficult to do that, again, is because we have no, most people seem to have no historical context for the events that have occurred in their own country. But it seems like he's spending too much time. Look, all he's got to do is just remind people that, you know, how do you jumpstart capitalism? Well, you jumpstart capitalism, you have a little socialist. And then just give all the examples you need to give, how FDR did it, Eisenhower did it. I mean,
Keynesian economics, in other words. Without saying that, because you say the word economics, and people's eyes go whoop, right in the back of their heads, and they're staring at their own brains.
It's easy, and they think we're going to get up in the morning and we're going to have to sing the Internationale or something. But we're a socialist country.
I'm still waiting for Bernie to say, everybody, pull out your wallet. No, I'm not asking you for money. We ask you for money, but I'm not asking you for money right now. Everybody, pull out your wallet. You see that little Social Security card? Congratulations. Every single human being in the United States is a socialist. Okay?
Exactly. And by the way, none of the Republicans in Congress the year in 1934 voted for that. Just thought I'd throw that in, too.
Right.
Hey, how about instead of opening your wallet, why don't you just turn on the tap? Why don't you put a glass under the tap water and drink it and see if you get sick? Why don't you go to the library and take out a book? You know, why don't you drive down the interstate and just wave to Ted Cruz as he zooms by in his Hummer?
Or maybe wave to an American soldier or sailor or marine or airman or coast guarder.
There's socialism, by God, everywhere.
But we're such babies. We don't want to be told that. We're afraid to be told that, Roberto. So it's like my boyhood chum who, when he was a little fellow, would not eat his vegetables. So his mother learned to put a little dollop of pudding on the end of the spoon with a big hunk of broccoli behind it.
Yeah.
And we've got to have that little dollop of freedom pudding or liberty pudding.
It used to be a world where when people made deals and they came to compromises and they a lot more, it used to throw you a lot more bones. And I'm pissed. I'm dismayed. And I'm just, it's not time to write a suicide note over here or anything like that.
No.
Like I say, the writing has been on the wall forever. You know, when Reagan took down the first thing he does is take down the solar panels. I mean, it's just one thing after another. Well, how about this for, Bernie's talking about free college education. Well, God, that just sounds like some crazy, crazy brainiac from the future came back in a time machine with this nutty idea. Well, have you ever heard of the GI Bill?
There is that.
I mean, do you have any idea of how we got to where we're at today? Anybody? Show a hand.
Bueller.
I've been reading this great book by David Halberstam. That man is a god, and the book is 750 pages, and the title is "The 50s." You ever read it?
No, I haven't. I have a feeling it just went on the list, though.
Everybody who listens to your show, or has listened to it, or will listen to it, it's just tremendous. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner, in case anybody forgets who this guy is. He goes into every component of the 50s. He has a chapter, and there's a whole tons of chapters there, anywhere from, 8 pages to 20 pages. He talks about the arms race, and he talks about pop culture, and he talks about education and civil rights and every possible thing. And it's just wonderful, and the reason, and then you string together the whole notion of how the 60s evolved. Without the 50s, you don't even have the 60s. And even beyond that, people like to say, going forward, you really realize that the whole, how it all, we ended up here where we are today, within a world of where fulfillment is measured by consumption. And how did this, where did all these consumers come from? Well, they came from that shot of socialism we got from Eisenhower. It came from, you need a whole bunch of people who make good money, who need to be a little bit educated to get to make that kind of money in order to buy the houses and the Westinghouse dishwashers and to have a new Chevy in the garage every single year. And then Madison Avenue realized how instructive they could be in this, in pushing this agenda forward, even with politics. Anyway, this book, I can't tell you how impressed I am with this book. And it really does, the whole thing starts coming together on how we were well, essentially God. Because what also started in the 50s, as you remember, was this kind of uneasy feeling by some people, again, the ones with half a brain, who thought that maybe this was not the road to fulfillment. Maybe, in fact, this was going to be a huge trap. You know?
And you only figure out you're in it when you're in it.
Well, and, you know, and it turns out that then we had complexes like the military-industrial complex and the big pharmacy complex and the big everything complex, and suddenly you're not, you know, what happened to you? You're... Anyhow, it's, I got another question for you.
Okay.
Somewhat related. This is a very big question.
Okay.
We've determined that you do need, and we've always had, the socialism-capitalism relationship has always been there, and it's always, as long as you have a public tax structure, you're going to have that. And
yeah, before they even had those names.
Oh, yeah. But every now and then, things go awry. Because especially in the countries that are slanted too much either way, either you get totalitarianism or you get, Wall Street, huge Wall Street crashes. And I was thinking, okay, we keep being, here we are again, another election. We got somebody in Sanders, just like we had in Nader, just like, I don't know, Teddy Roosevelt, was he for social programs or was he more of a...
No. He was to a large extent. I mean, he bore an animus toward the big trusts that was easily on a par with Bernie. He realized what they were doing to the country.
Yes. And he was a conservative, an environmentalist, and he was very people oriented, that guy.
As long as the people he was oriented toward were white, yes.
Right, and in the 50s, right, when we're just assuming, sadly, when we talk about that kind of, all that kind of stuff, we just mean basically white people. But that's another call, that's just another topic for another.
That's a further inquiry.
It is. And now, I forgot what we were talking about.
The big question. It's a big question.
Oh, the big question is, so every now and then there's these catastrophes. Well, so I'm asking myself, and now I'm asking you and anybody, how big a catastrophe is it going to take to make these gigantic changes to start really seriously forming these gigantic changes? And I was thinking, well, I guess that recession 8 years ago wasn't quite big enough.
Well, it wasn't. And
wait.
Okay.
I want to develop this. A much more dismaying level.
Let me get the ether.
Listen, they've come up with they come up with a great strategy on how to solve these huge catastrophes, how to remedy them. And instead of bailing out you and me and helping you and me, they've decided just to help the institutions that created these catastrophes. So I guess there's no catastrophe anymore that's going to be too big, is there?
No, there's not. And from the
there's going to be one. And it's going to be climate change, maybe.
I don't think there's any maybe about it. You can stand on the shores and command the tide not to come in till hell freezes over. Tide's coming.
No, I know. What I meant was, it's the Rome is burning while Nero is fiddling. You can, they can just mail checks to Goldman Sachs all they want, and the sea is going to keep rising. I mean, maybe that will be the catastrophe.
I think there's an element to that. I mean, the really big brains in the military. They wake up in a cold sweat at 3 a.m. thinking about climate change. You know, the men and the women with all the hardware on their shoulders and stuff.
They're on board with this. with NASA. They're on board with people with
Pat LaBrange. And if you get a denier in the White House, the military part of the military industrial complex is not going to stop worrying about climate change, because climate change affects their ability to be a military. You know who else is worrying like crazy about climate change? Insurance companies. And Senator Snowball can make all the speeches on the floor of the Senate that he wants to. Aetna and Cigna and Mutual of this and that and Mutual of New York and Omaha and what state Snake Farm and All Snake and AIG and all of those guys have people that they pay around, they pay just to sit around mopping the sweat off their brows, worrying about what climate change means for their ability to keep on being stinking rich.
Yeah,
and they're not going to, and they're not going to stop. Now there's a broader component to this, Reverbo. And that's the you and me component. You know, all those people out there who actually think that this system can be made to work if we just get serious about it. Now, we got members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who are absolutely convinced that no matter what we do, we're screwed. I think of Jay Cruzen in particular. He's, you know, quit playing around. We're just sitting here in the stands waiting for the fireworks to start. Or not start, since they're going to be soaking wet. I understand that, but the question becomes one of, and we're talking about a temporal comparison here, Reverbo, between, say, 1929, 1930, 1931, you know, when we were really in the death grip of the Depression, and, say, 2009. When we were, you know, the people, you know, there were probably more people lost their houses in the Great Recession than the Great Depression. It wouldn't surprise me. I don't know that to be true, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was. But the difference, yeah. But the difference being that to use the phrase that Roger Waters made famous, we are amusing ourselves to death.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go back to that thesis that I have propounded on a number of occasions. To wit, forsooth, that you're not going to get that huge popular movement until the cable goes out.
That'll be the big catastrophe.
Now maybe Bernie has proven me wrong. I mean, he had another freaking huge rally today that was, of course, ignored by the for-profit media. And just as an aside, Reverbo, don't you think that if Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton was having rallies that were drawing 50,000 people, given how thoroughly in the tank the for-profit media are for her, don't you think there would be footage on every nightly freaking newscast?
You'd be inundated with it.
So is it safe to say they're not happening?
Might be safe to say.
But people are turning out. They're turning out for Bernie, and they're turning out in humongous numbers. And the Hillary camp is so desperate that I even saw one Hilarian respond to a post I made on Facebook about how, well, the absolute disaster of non-democracy in Arizona the other day, Tuesday. And said, no, all those people standing in line were independents who didn't know that they couldn't vote in a closed primary. Really? All of them? Even the ones that got to vote at 12 minutes after midnight? There is a popular rising here, Reverbo. And it's something that people like you and me and the Horn family have talked about and wanted to see for years.
I know even Nader is still optimistic. He just published his latest book, and he's saying, look, this isn't about liberalism versus conservatism. This is just about, you know, leveling out the opportunity field a little bit, just fixing some stuff that's just been wrong for too long. But, I'm looking at it, you know, my cup's always half empty anymore. I'm looking at it, asking myself, like, how big a catastrophe do you need? Well, how big Does it matter how big your rally is if you're on the wrong side? If the powers that be are there, it can knock you down and whack you down so easily. The media just doesn't cover your show. The Koch brothers it's very easy to disenfranchise you if you're in the wrong group.
And there you go. And what scares me is that this movement dynamic politics that we're experiencing with Bernie's campaign, what really scares and depresses me, Reverbo, is that if I may get all Rutger Hauer for a moment, if Bernie is not the nominee, it will all disappear like tears in rain.
I just saw that movie again about 2 weeks ago. It's maybe in my top five. It's for sure in my top 10.
Oh, I think like Tears in Rain may be the most profound line ever delivered on film.
Trivia of a point on that. There's a documentary on the making of that movie, which I recommend. Long documentary, but real interesting. And evidently, Rutger Hauer improvised that line.
Yes, that was my understanding as well.
Yeah, and there's going to be, this sounds dangerous, evidently there's going to be a sequel to the movie.
Yeah, hasn't that been bandied about for about the last 9 years?
I don't know. The latest thing I saw was it's going to have star Ryan Gosling in the whatever role, whatever character it's going to be. And boy, that just sounds dangerous to me. How can you possibly, what is the point of that? It's like a sequel to Casablanca. What is the point?
That's exactly.
Well, you know what I mean.
No, that's exactly where I was going. I mean, so they leave on the plane, and this picks up in Lisbon.
Yeah, or the Star Wars problem, where it's going to be prequels or sequels, and it's never going to be right. Everybody's going to always bitch about something. But yeah, what a movie. I don't know. So I've been by nature, I'm a cynic, and I suppose I'm pessimistic. And when you think about the whole history of, or my history, and then you went back to the birth of the nation, and it's been a nonstop struggle, and it doesn't seem to be getting. It seems to be the same. Questions are still being asked, and the same crap is still being.
Oh, well, I'm beginning to wonder. Crap. I'm beginning to wonder, Reverbo, if it's not just baked in.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's just not going to happen. That's just the way it is here.
And and quite honestly, I fear that there are a lot of people in this country for whom Hillary's nomination will simply confirm that.
Well, we already have a problem. Less and less people vote all the time, and when less and less people vote, Republicans always have a greater chance of getting their person elected. That there's always that too. I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to quit voting either, but it's just this is getting kind of tiresome.
That's the argument I've made, Reverbo, is that I'm one of those people who says, yeah, you know, November comes around, if Hillary's the nominee, I'm gonna vote for her, and I'm catching hell for saying that from some quarters. But I'm going to vote for her because at that point in time, it will be a recognition that we are simply dealing with issues relating to a fumbling, crumbling empire toddling along to its inevitable ignominious end. And so you try to keep imperial administrators in there who will keep the fumbling and tumbling and toddling going.
On these people's worst days, you know, it's better than George Jr.'s best day, 1,000 times better. But even that gets old after a while. You just invented the title of a book that I wish I could write, but I'll never write, and it's called, my pretend title is The Monotony of Crisis. It's just all getting
you really should.
I can't. You do it. Hey, if you can't change the world, how the hell am I going to change the world?
But there's so much freighted in that. You were talking about catastrophes and... It's time to put Wolf Blitzer on a plane and send him out to where the tornado hit in Oklahoma so he can ask the lady if she's glad that God spared her and killed her neighbor instead.
There you go. Wait to me when it's over. We're going to send the film crew out to another earthquake, or we got another virus coming along. We got another terror attack. These terror attacks are in danger of becoming monotonous. I mean, this sounds crazy to say that.
There was a terror attack. It must be Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
And that sounds cynical. And I'm sure if there was some right winger listening, they'd be, we don't love America. Well, no, the two are not mutually exclusive. But the thing is, let me just put it this way, Reverbo. I happened not to be on the air Tuesday because of a convergence of bullshit. But as I followed the news of the unfolding, terror attack in Belgium, I thought to myself, well, at least we know one thing about this. We know we're never going to make an actual effort to understand the real reasons that any of this shit is happening.
That seems to be the truth, don't it?
Because, well, it's so much easier just to say, Muslims, bruga bruga.
Yeah.
But that just means that it's going to happen somewhere else. And so I'm toddling down the road. I went up and got myself a gas station hamburger for dinner. Oh, man, that was a brutal onion. And I'm on the way back. And I'm on the way back, and I hear National Petroleum Radio opining, and now there may be some evidence, it is believed, of a plot for a dirty bomb. And I thought, Jesus Christ, really? You had to? Because, see, Reverbo, there's always thoughts of some plot of a possible program-related dirty bomb activity. To go to another movie reference, it's Men in Black, and there's always an Arkelian battle cruiser in orbit that's 30 seconds away from blowing up the planet.
That is true.
Somewhere on this planet is always some human being who thinks, I'd just like to... those Americans real good for once. They blew up my granddaddy's house and killed granddaddy and grandma and uncle and auntie and my niece and nephew, and there I was carrying the corpse of my 3-year-old little daughter out of the rubble, and there's some photographer taking a picture of me that's never going to be allowed to be seen in America. There's always somebody that... So we know that, and we focus on, we got to stop the next guy. You remember when Kind of Sleazy Rice said, we've got to get it right 100% of the time. They only have to get it right once.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, the whole thing becomes, they spin it into, the whole thing becomes this gigantic spin job. Maybe we can go back to the 50s for that, too, wherein... that they hit you, they hit people, it becomes simply unpatriotic to think any other way.
Oh, right, because, I remember after 9/11 when we said, maybe we should try to figure out why this happened. And the Republicans said, oh, bunch of sissy liberals just want to have a psychological, social counseling sensitivity session when what we need is to bomb them to death. Well, by all means, let's bomb some more. And then let's not be surprised the next time the bomb blows up over here. And then we can once again say, well, one thing we know for sure, at least we won't have to worry about figuring out why this happened.
Frankly, I'm a little surprised that they haven't. Sometimes, we live through mutually assured destruction. We lived through so often. How did we manage to live through it so far? And would you be surprised that the whole thing ended in about 2 weeks?
Well, we lived through the Cold War because the Cold War was other white people. And so we felt confident that we're good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian white people, and we don't want to blow up the planet. Yeah, granted, those white people over there are godless, commie, atheist, mother haters, but at least they're white, and because they're white, we know they don't want to blow up the planet. But, you know, you're Muslims. Well, you know, if they blow up the planet, maybe the 12th Imam will come back, you know, because they're crazy.
Yeah, we do tend to cherry pick those things, don't we?
Well, and we credit sanity on something that I think we could at least describe as an arbitrary basis as well.
Yeah.
But you know, there you are. You're in Maryland, one of the more successful states right now.
It's got its issues here, but it's. I guess people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ballmer notwithstanding, but.
Hey, I want to segue out of this real quick with something that may be something close to your heart, if not your stomach.
Yeah, well, probably both.
Because my girlfriend just walked in, and I think I'm going to get off the phone here in a minute, and I'm going to give her a hug. But I want to talk to you about a company that makes canned goods, and this company's name is Glory. Are you familiar with it?
I am.
In particular, she tried the Glory Caribbean black beans and rice.
I have.
Well, I'll have that for supper here in a little while.
Well, they're right tasty. And you know, I can highly recommend the turnip greens, the collard greens, and the okra and tomatoes are right fine, too.
They got a can of black-eyed peas I'm going to take a little harder look at next time.
I have personally opened those cans, and I can recommend them highly.
I have a secret ingredient that's going to elevate this dinner to just an incredible gastronomic
These are Caribbean black beans, and we're going to elevate?
We're going to elevate because there's no meat in here yet.
I think I know where we're going.
I'm going to chop up and put in a succulent link at Binkert's Italian Sausage, and that will do the trick.
Time out. I didn't know Binkert's made Italian sausage.
You should. You want to tell her yourself? She's standing right here.
No. I believe you. I just didn't know.
Oh, yes. They make, they will customize. If you put it to them in a genuine enough way. Do you know that this German sausage company makes an outstanding chorizo? I was floored.
Well, I am too, and I admit it's my own bias. I get to the German sausage part at the Binkert's website, and I'm home.
Look no further except
no substitutes.
Well, and that is how fortunate I am. That's why I say I would like to stall here as long as possible. Now, I know we're not getting any better looking the older we get either, and Hollywood isn't going to come knocking anytime soon from now on. And even if we don't stall here, if you're lucky enough to have a mate, you know, you might not, you know, this gradual fossilization that occurs, you might not really notice it's happening. But, tonight is going to be a happy night, and it's going to start with or include a bowl of Glory Caribbean style black beans and rice.
Amen. Spiced up with some Binkert's Italian sausage.
And
yum.
Extra hot peppers and, you know, extra, there's a few extra.
Yeah,
things.
You got it. No, it's no fun if you're not doctoring it, you know.
Right.
Yeah, yum. So, yum.
Hey, I'm very glad to have. To have returned and caught you at work there, and perhaps we will chat again.
Oh, I hope we do. It has been far too long, and I always enjoy our conversations. And listen, I just want to make sure that you keep the Silver Pelican properly moored. I heard about that one that got loose over Maryland. I wondered if you had a hand in it, but.
No, well, you hate to hear that. You really do. Any bad news involving airships, just I don't like to hear it. The airships already don't have a very reliable reputation. Well, it's interesting to bring up the Pelican. Airship season is coming up, and I need to make sure that she's ready to fly, and we can make sure she's got plenty of restocked beverage compartments and all that kind of stuff. And
coconut water is big these days.
Well, coconut water is it's a very good, excellent mixer too. So there's a lot I got to do that. I got to summarize the Pelican for.
Without a doubt, you know, summer is airship season.
We'll see it. I don't know what the altitude is in West Virginia, but I'm using helium, and I don't know just how high. But yeah, I'll see. And you might look up one day and see the glint of the Silver Pelican over your.
Over the Kincaid Manse, absolutely. And one last question before you go: how's work on the patent for the helium filled pants coming?
I've done everything I need to do. All my paperwork's been filed for 55 years already. I'm still waiting to hear. I just keep hearing the same thing: they're back ordered, and
Yeah, it's probably those confounded Knutton valves.
It could be them. It could very
them. It's always either the Knutton valve or the flageolate.
God, I would just love to be able to float from room to room wearing those stylish and efficient pants.
Yeah, just kind of flapping your arms a little bit just to provide, the gentlest of propulsion.
God. Well, and with that, I'm going to...
Well, by all means, bon appetit to you and your beloved, and I hope we talk soon. It has been far too long, Reverbo, far too long indeed.
You're right about that. All right, well, very good. Have a good night.
All right, take care, Reverbo. Bye
now. Okay, man. Bye.
And that, for those of you who never heard him, that is Reverbo, the human boy. It is 28 minutes before the hour. We're a little over halfway through the program. We used to have conversations like that all the time, Reverbo and I. And sometimes you do just kind of cave up and try to work on enjoying life. It's been known to happen. So, I've got some good news. I've got some very good news if we act upon it. I had two emails. One from Bob in Texas, and one from Strongman. There are, as we speak, $400 in challenges on the table. $200 from Strongman, and $200 from Bob in Texas. And I am happy to announce that we are on the way toward meeting those challenges. Dollar for dollar. Your 5 becomes 10, 10 becomes 20, etc. And we are in point of fact, $60 into the process. So we've got $340 to go. And that will dig us out of the hole that we are in. So thank you very kindly to Strongman, and thank you very kindly to Bob, because this is about the only way that we can keep all of this going. Because, the other day I walked into a Sleep Number bed store, but no, they didn't seem interested in advertising. I guess they're reaching enough people through Rush Limbaugh. So there you have it. You guys do the heavy lifting of the George Soroses of the world until he figures out the value of progressive broadcasting. A couple of notes here. One of which just came in, yay verily, from the very same state from which Reverbo was dialing. It's our buddy Philip, writing from Maryland. who under the subject line, "Damn, it's time," and I think this was occasioned by me referring to the fact that the good old RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that the white-wing religion industry now wants to use to make us all knuckle under and admit that the church has a right to enforce its religious diktats on people who don't even ascribe to that religion. Philip writes, "Damn, Bob, isn't it high time that we don't call Bill Clinton a Democrat? Were I a law enforcement official, I'd arrest him for racketeering and prostitution for what he did to the Democratic Party." Okay, let's forget the latter charge, the prostitution part. I don't want to besmirch the honorable trade of women who attempt to contend with this and prior society's sexual hang-ups and male inadequacies. It's also high time that we disabuse the Nationalist White Party of its mantra that it supports smaller government. It loves law enforcement, monitoring of Muslim and African American neighborhoods, monitoring of emails and telephone calls, patrolling restrooms for proper usage according to gender, even if Trump, who publicly cringes at the idea of women attending to their bodily needs, is elected dictator. Stop and frisk, more money for defense, and an excess of weapons that will never be used, we hope, and aid to authoritarian regimes that permit American businessmen to operate without restraint. And that's just for starters. Now, transgender soup, you say? A transgender in your soup? Does that mean the reactionary fascists believe that the left will even monitor our soup to ensure that there is estrogen in the bowls doled out to men and testosterone in the bowls doled out to women? That would certainly make a mess of the restroom issue at the end of a meal, especially if one ate several bowls. That's all for now, Bob. I have to ponder how a communist can be in bed with Wall Street. There's such a need for the teaching of logic and civics in our schools that my pessimistic imagination is angry that it has been so woefully inadequate during this election season. I thought Nixon was the worst, then Reagan, then Bush the second. Now I just say, fog it, why even speculate? As for Hillary, she's a moderate Republican, a nearly extinct species, and neoliberal feigning to be progressive. If she's progressive, I'm riding in flow, so the price we pay will be decent. What a mess. The Republicans see Rafaelito Cruz as the better choice than Trump, and I look longingly at brochures for Scandinavia. Be well, Philip. And you be well, too, Philip. And Philip, as a matter of fact, just jumped in to help out in the endeavor. We have $325 to go to match Strongman's and Bob's challenges. And again, thank you to both, and thank you to all of you. Whoa, $225! We have $225 to go, and that is deeply inspiring. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Darlene, in Connecticut. $225 to go to match Bob's and Strongman's challenges for the evening so that we can do some serious bill paying. Now, I want to back up to something here because I get these magnificent, thought-laden emails, and they're every bit a part of what you and I would consider to be conversation radio, just without the talking by two people. And this comes in from Harry in Baltimore. It's kind of a Maryland night, apparently. This Thorn in the Side Thursday. And Harry in Baltimore's remarks go back to my conversation with Angry last night and something that I said along the way. Harry writes, "When you were talking tonight about the consequences of a trade agreement like NAFTA that ruined the subsistence farming lives of many Mexicans, I was reminded of what Noam Chomsky and others have said about the many deleterious effects of the shift from feudalism to capitalism. Chomsky, over the last 20 years at least, has identified himself as a committed anarchist. And I admit off the bat that that is a, and this is me, not him. But that's a troubling word, like socialism's a troubling word, not because of what the word means, but because of what people hear when the word is uttered. And the two are wildly divergent things. He calls himself a libertarian anarchist, Harry continues, but perhaps he could also be called a communal anarchist because he would probably agree with the ideas of mutual aid and so forth. But in his speeches, when asked about anarchism, he talks about how terrible it was for both Americans and Europeans, e.g. the British, to be pushed off their farms by the Industrial Revolution and forced to become employees of factories, or as he sees it, becoming wage slaves. And that was a horror. The de-ruralization of America that happens especially in the aftermath of the Second World War, when there was a conscious decision made that we had to become a society of permanent consumption, and ideas of frugality just, you know, were taken out back behind the barn, which was promptly burned, and beaten to death. That. And, of course, Appalachia was an early experiment in that, insofar as you had multi-generational families that had lived on the same or nearby farms who had scratched out a living, subsistence farming. The word that is often used is hard scrabble, which, of course, means that when hillbillies play Scrabble, your words have to have at least four syllables. We're not as dumb as people think. It was brutal because the coal industry came in, took people's land, took them off their land, and almost overnight completely dispossessed them of an entire culture and left them to work for a pittance for the coal industry or die. I mean, that was it. Work for the coal industry or die. Now, okay, maybe you ran a barber shop, but you were still working for the coal industry in a coal town. And if you bucked the coal industry, you got to die. They'd either come and kill your ass, or you just wouldn't work anymore. In which case, you'd get to die by starving. And not nearly as many people who wanted out were able to get out because people didn't have getting out then as now takes money. But anyway, let me get back to what Harry said. In Chomsky's philosophy, working as someone else's employee for a wage is anti-democratic and anti-freedom, real freedom. He believes that all factories or production plants should be owned by the workers because otherwise, in his view, you have a totalitarian society at work that essentially wipes out any kind of democracy outside of the workplace. Can you imagine that? What if I work within the metaphor of what I grew up around. What if the furnace operator and the furnace foreman and the plant manager all make the same money and decisions are made democratically? Well, within capitalism, there is a determination that that is inherently impossible. Because the smarter you are, the more money you make, which is, of course, untrue. But I get the point. So I had this slight feeling of deja vu tonight, says Harry, because what NAFTA and other trade agreements have done is to further increase the damage and totalitarian aspects of capitalism. Chomsky has argued in some of his lectures that we would have a healthier democracy if workers jointly owned their own workplace. And the bottom line is that this is what capitalism has in part brought us, wage slavery. Once capitalists become the only people to create or offer jobs, then the rest of us, unless we also feel compelled to become capitalists and compete with the first wave of capitalists, become employees who are enslaved by a job with wages that could be terminated or reduced at any time. As some Marxist commentators have said, one thing that Karl Marx did not foresee, and Adam Smith also did not take into account, was the ability of capitalists to move labor around, i.e. to foreign countries. Marx assumed that capital could be mobile. He referred to capital as value in motion. But labor power was not. It now turns out that even labor can be mobile, with multinational corporations moving their factories and even their headquarters to another part of the world. So I myself, at least, have this sickening sense that we are, metaphorically, almost back to the most poisonous and inhumane days of the early Industrial Revolution. And with these trade agreements and our military interference in other countries' affairs, we are now also forcing people in other countries to abandon what gave them both pride and intergenerational meaning. Marx famously wrote that all that is solid melts into air in the Communist Manifesto, and most people agree that the meaning of this was that the sheer unstoppable motivations of capitalists and the inevitable dynamics of capitalism were destroying people's traditional ways of living and working. And it certainly has worked out that way. But Marx and Engels also wrote this in the Communist Manifesto: the weapons with which the bourgeoisie felled feudalism to the ground are now turned against the bourgeoisie itself. And many people who still take Marx seriously now believe that Marx was right about this, too, that capitalism is such a destructive economic system that it will ultimately destroy all of the capitalists, what he meant by the bourgeoisie, as well. In Marx's view, it seems capitalism is like an infectious plague that cannot be cured by anyone inside that system. And I've made that argument well as well. Capitalism is self-consuming. So we have learned nothing, says Harry, from our pilot program with NAFTA? Apparently not. And Harry adds, and I myself don't even need to go to Mexico to see capitalism destroying everything in its path. Here in Baltimore, one of our biggest problems is vacant buildings, both residential and commercial. And according to some honest real estate agents, those vacancies are in part caused by big commercial banks that will not allow properties to be sold below what these banks think is their true value. So the banks will hold on to these vacant properties rather than sell them at a lower price to people who would renovate these buildings if the cost of the vacant building itself was not so relatively high. I've also been told that in my part of Baltimore, a lot of smaller owners of commercial properties would rather let their commercial buildings stand vacant rather than lease some of it to commercial tenants. Apparently, these latter owners claim that leasing to tenants will prevent them from being able to sell the buildings when some great offer comes along. But the fact is that these buildings continue to stay vacant because those so-called great offers aren't happening. So Baltimore, borrowing a quote from that Noam Chomsky borrowed from a credible economic correspondent in London, is, to a certain extent, eating itself alive from the inside. So property values only spiral further downward, which then makes the property held onto by these banks to be worth even less. Nobody wins, but at least these banks can say that they held onto their property and didn't give it away for pennies. I give up. What makes the American people such poor judges in general of the people who seek to govern us? How do we get people thinking and learning again about their government and their genuine problems we face? I give up. So, can we add brain-frozen dunces and those so paranoid they don't even trust the scientific method to your list of aspiring terrorists who want to disrupt other people's ability to live a decent life? Oh, Harry, I think we can. I think we can. Thank you, Harry. Thank you very kindly. And let's run over to the stress line and see what's happening. I believe we have a caller calling in from Connecticut. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
Hi, it's Kevin again. How you doing?
I'm good, Kevin. How about you?
All right. You know, I just want to, Eisenhower, you know, who everybody, well, I know a lot of people on the liberal side, Democratic side, quote him, right? They quote his, but I remember, I think that was directed towards Kennedy, wasn't it, when he made that speech about that industrial complex? Wasn't it directed towards President Kennedy when he was running?
Well, I mean, Eisenhower coined the term.
Yeah, I know that, but wasn't it directed towards Kennedy, though?
It was in his farewell address. So, I mean,
I had heard, though, it was
Well, it started out, it got edited. It started out as the military-industrial congressional complex.
Yeah, because I thought, okay, that. But anyway, I just want to remind people, though, that, you know, his administration used the military-industrial complex to do a lot of shady things, especially with the CIA. You know, covert operations were big under his administration. You know, his administration, the CIA, overthrew the Mossadegh regime in Iran, which were still...
And didn't they also do Arbenz in Guatemala?
Yeah, United Fruit Stand. Yep. So what I'm saying, though, is, you know, people are... you know, I did a whole foreign policy paper at one time on the whole Iranian thing and really the origins of the confrontation and the conflict with Iran and it, you know, and that, you know, and that, you know, that's really where you have to trace the present situation all the way back to, well, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm just trying to make a point. It always kind of bugs me a little bit when people make that quote because it's as if to say Mr. Eisenhower never used that complex himself. You know what I mean? Now, if he didn't use a complex the way he did it in nefarious ways, I might go along.
Well, I think there is an argument to be made that by the time he was leaving office, Eisenhower had learned some things.
He did some decent things. Yes, he had a mixed record, I think, on foreign policy.
I mean, on foreign policy, on domestic policy too, because. Probably the best chance that this country ever had to get full-on universal single-payer health care was during the Eisenhower administration. Most people don't know that.
Well, yeah, if you compare his foreign policy with the Suez Canal crisis, he got Israel out of there. I think he was the last president, really, to put pressure on Israel in that respect. But yeah, I mean, he did sign a Baghdad Pact, which tried helping diplomacy in that region, you know. So I mean, yeah, he had a mixed record. All I'm saying though is, I don't ever want to give any of these people a free pass at things. And if you go by, if you put Eisenhower today's, by today's standard, which isn't really, I don't know if it would be really, I don't like to do that. After studying history as long as I have, I don't like to take past things that happened with presidents and put them in the present day because dynamics change, as you know, right? So I never like to take one president out. And I like to leave things as they were with that particular president at that time.
Sure.
You know, now I know there's overlap with every president. That's pretty obvious. So, but even that, you know, I think Eisenhower, as a whole, had some decent policies. I'm just saying, though, that I can never give any president free pass when it comes to military issues, unless, you know, you're going to go all the way back to Thomas Jefferson. The Louisiana Purchase was a foreign policy issue to expand more territory.
And hopefully to keep Napoleon out of North America.
Yep.
Oh, that whole thing developed in quite a delightfully little complex fashion. I get your point. I think what I was trying to get.
I just wanted to mention that, you know. I just wanted to see what you might have thought because I think about these things, you know, more than maybe I should sometimes, but. You know, I'm not being into romanticizing. I guess you know what a leader said
right.
A couple of years ago. That's all. I just wanted to run it by someone as yourself, who I think is very smart about these things.
Well, and I'm glad you did because, you know, what I was talking to with Reverbo about the number of people outside of this little family community congregation. Who could carry on in the United States, who can carry on the conversation that we're having, is probably a hell of a lot smaller number than you or I even imagine.
Really?
And therein lies a boatload of our problems.
My gosh. That's a bleak commentary, huh, Bob?
Well, I'm afraid I don't mean to be, but maybe it's something about Thorn in the Side Thursday that's just kind of bleak.
Well, on a lighter note, Bob, every time that the New York Sports Media talks about Geno Smith, I can't help but thinking of you because you're a big West Virginia football fan.
How's Geno doing?
Well, I don't know. They want it's a Joe Namath effect. Like I'm a Yankee fan and a Knicks fan, but I'm a Steelers football fan. So I'm not. But I listen to New York sports stations, and I always call it the Joe Namath effect. Up in these Jets fans, they want everybody to be Joe Namath when they get to the Jets, you know. And Joe Namath ain't walking through that door again, I'm afraid.
Well, not until the Jets get a little better at draft selections.
No, I know, but I'm just saying. I think of you because I know you're a big West Virginia fan, and I saw. I think the basketball team lost over the weekend.
Oh God, that was humiliating.
Huggins, right? Yeah, I saw that game. But anyway, I used to really like West Virginia football, but this Danny Holderson, I don't know about him, but.
Oh, well, you're not saying anything that a whole bunch of the state of West Virginia isn't saying, because we just kind of looking at that Holgerson. I don't know about him.
He has a great offensive mind, but defensively, sometimes I wonder if they even practice defense.
Kevin, come on down. You will be right at home.
No, I used to love them when they had all those great receivers with Geno Smith. A couple of them are in the Rams now. One of the most fun teams in the country back then. Remember that team?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love those wide receivers for the Rams. I escaped my mind their names right now, but they are so fun to watch.
Well, that's the same receiving core that walked out linked arms in arm or walked out together at a game a couple of years ago with the hands up, don't shoot. And they got a lot of respect from me for that, too.
You know, and people that don't think politics and sports collide, just look at what Dave Zirin writes. You ever read him?
Oh, he's he and Charlie Pierce are two of the best sports writers in the country.
Dave Zirin, so you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, politics and sports, you know, I know people on the left don't like to talk about, you know, they don't want sports to be uttered in the word of politics. But, I mean, even in the state of Connecticut where I live, they built this football field. Yet now, you know, for UConn, now they want to cut all these jobs. You know, they want to cut the state budget, you know, in the state of Connecticut. They're going to think about, you know, actually our Governor Malloy, he's very much like a right-wing Republican in many ways. He's very anti-public education. He's into these charter schools.
I was going to say, I'll bet he's a charter school guy.
Yeah, he is. And he gave a talk to the Heritage Foundation, this governor of ours. Everybody thinks like, the Northeast, where I'm from, that you know, there's not racism and bigotry, and that some of our politicians who have the D after name aren't like Republicans. Well, you know, that's not true at all. Actually, Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, she's a rare breed these days. New England's become much more conservative in so many ways in the last 15 years. You know. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure you're aware of some of these things.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, neoliberalism has really crept its way through everything now, you know? So, I remember a professor I had, he said, you know, they'd rather build nice buildings than really be about the people, you know? You know?
Well, that's absolutely true. And, you know, we've got something similar cooking down here because now that the teabagger legislature down here has gotten rid of the prevailing wage on a state level, it means that they're going to have, I mean, they've preached for years that if we just got rid of prevailing wage, we can build four schools for the price of two. Well, now I want to see the little bastards do it, because they can't, because it was just a lie to begin with.
Wow. I know to build this football stadium at Rensselaer Field in East Hartford, that there was endangered species declaration, you know, where the stadium was built, and they had to remove that in order to build a stadium. So they built the stadium over endangered species.
You know, nice.
So people don't realize, you know, it goes to your, you know, it's not exactly about what, but, you know, it's about the environment, right, and about degradation of our...
Well, what conference does UConn even play in now? I mean, they used to be with us in the Big East.
Now they're an American Athletic Conference, and they're not, I was against building a football stadium. I went and argued. I know the AD of UConn didn't like me too much at the time because I said UConn will never be a football school. We don't have enough high school football talent in the state of Connecticut to make it worthwhile. Of course, I'm right about this.
I go.
They're going to have to go get their talent all over the country. And it's going to, you know, those plane rides cost a lot of money. Those hotels, these coaches staying, cost money, right? It's not free money. And of course, they're not that good in football. They had one or two good years under the other coach, but
Randy Edsall.
Yeah, but and he, of course, he's now not in Maryland. His dream job, he's coaching the NFL now, some assistant somewhere. But, you know, the thing about, you know, as well as I do, that you, as good as West Virginia is, they're still going to be knocking on the door forever with Alabama and those and Michigans and Ohio.
They
know. No, I'm just saying, but, and UConn's never even going to come close to being the school West Virginia is in football. See, that's what was my next thing. I'm a realist. To be a great football school, you know, you got to really have a lot of things right at your backyard. So it's a cost. So again, they'd rather cut education. They'd rather cut programs for the needy kids just to have these football stadiums, these big, you know, what these coaches make for salaries these days at these universities that are, you know, they could hire a lot of teachers with that money, no?
Well, yeah, and that's the trade-off. I mean, look at Alabama, great football school. And there's an entire network of high schools and junior high schools that are nothing but football factories. Yeah. Meanwhile, academics go begging.
Yes, I'd like to take a trip down south sometime just to see all that, because I've heard about it for years and years and years, and I'd like to actually see it with my own eyes, you know?
Oh, it's any SEC football Saturday is a spectacle to behold.
What, football? Well, I know, I see it on TV, but this high school football is big, though, down there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And probably even in West Virginia, I bet it's huge, right?
Yeah, and high school basketball is arguably even more huge in West Virginia.
Yeah. West Virginia's always been good in basketball. The Jerry West came from West Virginia.
Yeah, till last Friday night. Oh, God, don't remind me again. That was, what did we lose by? Like 17 points?
What's that?
We lost by like 12, 17 points, something like that, to Stephen F. Austin. It was awful. It was just awful.
Well, Jerry West is from West Virginia.
Yes, and Rod Hundley and
Jerry West. You know, Jerry West is big into building this Warriors team. Did you know that?
That was my understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, and he built those great Laker teams. Even Red Auerbach used to say that. He goes, Jerry West built those Laker teams, not Phil Jackson.
Oh no, he was a brilliant general manager. And he even spent some time in trying to get Memphis up and running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't buy many sports books, but I did buy his autobiography.
I did too, and it was a page turner, and it was heartrending as well.
Yeah, but I this Joe Manchin though, I look at all these Democratic senators, in office, you know. And Manchin, you know, he wasn't a very good replacement for Robert Byrd, though, was he?
To be fair, nobody was going to be a good replacement for Robert Byrd. But we have two of the most lackluster, pitiful, lick-spittle, awful members of the Senate you could possibly have in Joe Manchin. And if you thought Joe Manchin was bad, it's only because you haven't gotten to know Shelley Moore Capito yet. Because she's truly awful.
Well, you know, I always said when Kennedy and Byrd left the Senate for the Democratic Party that, you know, it'd be a completely new day, and it has been. I think the Democratic Party doesn't stand for Republicans half as much as they should. At least Elizabeth Warren tries, but, you know, and Bernie does. But I always say, like, the worst thing, if Bernie didn't win the White House, he most likely won't, you know, at least he'll still be in the Senate, you know. I often say I'd if I had to choose between the two, I'd rather have the legislative branch.
Well, as Reverbo noted, you know, the Republican Party has proven they don't need the White House in order to wreck the country.
No, they've done a good job at wrecking the country, you know, and I can't believe that they have the audacity to blame Democrats for everything when they've been running the show essentially virtually since Newt Gingrich and those people won the Congress over when Clinton was president. And then they had George Bush for 8 years as president, and they've mostly had a GOP Congress the whole time President Obama's been there, and they have the audacity to blame the Democrats. You know, that's why they're so stupid. I hate to use the word stupid, but right-wingers are stupid if they don't look at what I just said, which is factual, and understand that. No, they've been doing this stuff to the country, too, you know, and more so. You know, and who's holding up the appointment for the Supreme Court? The Republican Party, you know. And I don't want to get started on illegal immigration. They've been complicit with all what they're bitching about now forever and ever. Corporate America serves the Republican Party. They've been bringing in this cheap illegal immigration labor for years in this country. They have sweatshops in New York City that a lot of these people work in. If you go to all these billionaires' homes, I guarantee you they have illegal, quote, immigrants working in their homes for what jobs are done there. You know, and Mr. Trump's a big hypocrite. He has a clothing line that comes from China, he does business in Dubai, so he hates Muslims, but has no problem doing business in Muslim countries. So, you know,
well, sure, as long as the check clears.
Yeah. Everything about those people is just both ahistorical, idiotic, and most of the time they don't even know what they're talking about. They sound like, they don't even sound like school children. They sound like toddlers who just say no all the time.
You go toddlers. I was thinking more middle school based on what's been going on lately.
Well, I don't even know if I give a middle school, because that's too nice. I need toddlers, you know, or maybe even infants that just cry all day. You know, don't have their bottle yet. you hear about Gary Shandling passed away today, Bob.
Yeah, I did. I saw that right before airtime.
That's sad. That guy, I tell you, he was great. After Carlin and Pryor, I liked him. You know, today's comedians don't compare to those guys. But
no, they were a breed apart. Well, Kevin, it's great to hear from you, man.
Have a good day. Thanks, Bob. Take care. Have a good night.
Oh, my pleasure. Call back anytime.
Take care.
All right. Bye now. From Connecticut, that is Kevin, and let's continue onward over to the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. Is this Heather?
Yes, it is. Now, you were talking a little bit ago about a team that came out and held a football team, which is a college team, that came out, held up their hands.
No. It was the Ram. It was the receiving corps for the St. Louis Rams.
Oh, okay, cool. But irregardless, there was a college basketball team who were women. I think it was sometime within the past couple years in December, came out in t-shirts. Saying something about don't shoot or something like that. And they are from South Bend, and the coach is Muffet McGraw. She explained to the police officer, she said, this is nothing towards you guys. This was their idea. We're supporting it. Well, the whole damn city had a shit fit.
Why am I not surprised?
I couldn't believe it. I thought that was pathetic of them. You still there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, but no, I couldn't believe that there were so many people in South Bend that could be so friggin' nasty about something like that. I mean, they should watch what the hell's going on. And a lot of it's probably even going on in their own damn city, and they don't even know what, you know, they don't even know it. Which is, you know, sad, but of course, how shall I say? And then, of course, 2-3 nights later, they have some woman on who is supposedly head of the something dealing with the police, who invited them to come to some kind of thing for some police officer that died somehow. And, you know, had I been Muffet or any of those girls on that team, I wouldn't have even done it. Because what they did was that important to them, and I thought it was that important. So, you know.
Right, but of course they got a huge rasher of grief. Right.
Yes, yes. And there are people, I guess when this was somebody, I guess they supposedly canceled their tickets. I'm like, are you freaking serious? This is like one of the decent women's basketball teams, and you got season tickets, and you could go to a home game, and you live in South Bend. You could go any damn time you want. Come on, people.
But you underestimate the power of racism in America, Heather.
I know, and that's sad, but it's just so, it's irritating, and it just so bothers me, but I don't know. I was just taught to try to respect people and get to know them.
Well, that means you're about 8 miles out in front of your average white winger, okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just figured I'd call and complain for a minute.
It's good for the soul.
All righty. Well, I will talk to you soon and have a great night.
All right. You take care, Heather. Good talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Michigan, that's our buddy Heather. And let's see. Yeah, both lines are open. And I have really great news here. We have, thanks to Gerald, and thanks to Wesley, and thanks to Janie, we have about $50 to go. $50 to go in fundraising to meet both Strongman's and Bob's two challenges and get us up and out of the hole. And that is huge. That's just huge. Hey, I think we've got, and thank you, everyone. I think we got Todd on the line. Is that you, Todd?
Hi, Bob. Yeah, how you doing?
What's happening, man?
Good. Just enjoying a beautiful evening tonight. It's nice here tonight.
Well, you can have some lovely evenings down there. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, that's one of the nicer things about the South is the springtime. It lasts a few weeks, but when it's here, it's nice.
I trust the azaleas are all blooming.
Oh, you know, I have azaleas that are 65 years old in front of my house.
And yeah, spring comes and the whole state turns pink, right?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, the Masters and Augusta, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're coming in. They're beautiful. They really are. And the smells. Oh, when you're walking, you know, everything's blooming. It's really amazing. The wisteria.
Wisteria, jasmine. Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing. And then when I start cooking falafel, it just adds to that.
Ooh, well, that's nice. That, now, there's a thought.
Did I share that with you, this recipe?
No.
I talked to so many people. It was a family member that So anyway, I know you like falafel, and some people like falafel, and I've been missing that since I've been here. They're really good falafel. It's hard to get. But if you get Triscuit garden herb, there's a recipe on the back of the box. It really works.
For and making falafel out of Triscuits?
Well, yeah. The trick is, I mean, I already make hummus. Hummus is easy. Everybody can make hummus.
But boy, I tell you what, I hate me some store-bought hummus.
They got the nerve. I'm getting loud. I'm sorry. But then they have the nerve to charge like $4 for decent hummus. It's like, really? I can make that for like 25 cents.
What gets me is, I mean, I've tried more brands of hummus from the grocery store than I can count off the top of my head, and they're all expensive as hell.
They're expensive.
They range anywhere from bland to awful.
Exactly. Exactly. You still have to do the, as you say, the doctoring, right? I'm saying you still have to add to it to make it palatable. And I heard you mention the other day, and I have to totally agree. Kroger's a new store to me, and so is the Piggly. I'm not saying that. The Pig. And,
the Wiggling Pig?
Yeah, I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying that. See, you know why I'm laughing. I was like, what?
Now, wait a minute. Piggly Wiggly is a southern thing. You mean they aren't down there in South Carolina, Stan?
Wait, and then what is, not only is the logo a big fat pig face with a little derby on, little hot dog dude hat on, little paper hat.
Yeah.
From the 50s, right? Not only that, but ours, most of them here in South Carolina, they have the whole back wall is Fat Bat. I mean, a whole wall of Fat Bat.
That's just nice.
Shit. I don't eat that shit. Fat Bat. Oh, my God, man. You just want to die fat. No, seriously. Everybody,
oh, I guess we're not going to have a meaningful conversation about hog jowl either then, are we?
You know what? If I put somebody else on the phone, you will. I'm not talking about... I don't even let them cook chitlins in the house. When they come to me, I'm like, get the fuck out.
Well,
of
you don't cook it chitlins like in the house. Shit. You cook them outside.
Man, it smells like boiling shit. I am not eating anything that smells like boiling shit. If you have to go through that much trouble and it still smells like shit, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't care what you call me.
Oh, you're just one of those food elitists is what you are, Todd.
I like to eat. So, I don't want to get, I already got sidetracked, but seriously, with the, this recipe is amazing. So we start off with good hummus, right? Which, as you said, everybody can make it home and you figure out how to do it. The Triscuits, you crush them up and then you add egg to it. And I'm foo-foo on the recipes because I do my own cooking. You know, a recipe I might look at, I might not, but this actually works. It basically is just the eggs and maybe, I have to add a little more cumin to it. But the results, Bob, I'm telling you, this, and now you can make tzatziki yourself, you know, everything else, but this is the authentic. You have to try this. You really do.
I'm going to go find me a box of garden herb Triscuits and see if the recipe's on, and barring that, I'm pretty sure it's on the web.
You know what? It is, exactly. They do have a website. Exactly. And I was shocked at how good it was. That's the only reason I'm telling you.
Well, by the way, courtesy of Gerald, I have one word for you, Todd. Scrapple.
Oh, that's Philly, man. Ah, scrambled pig brains. Now, I have to admit, I didn't eat that until I figured out what it was when I was little. But, yeah, that's a Philly tradition there, scrapple.
Oh, the scrapple's an Amish thing, isn't it?
Yeah, Pennsylvania Dutch country. But, it's the Pennsylvania Dutch. The Reading Railroad used to run from Lancaster County, where the land is still wonderful, and right into downtown Philadelphia, right, at the Reading Terminal. And there's a wonderful market there, which you can visit if you get to it. It's still there. They have all kinds of fresh food from the country. So they have, the Amish people, because Amish people are like, they're the original organic farmers.
Oh, yeah, and when it comes to a pig, they use everything but the oink.
Right, and you know you're getting, you're eating what they eat, you know what I'm saying? It's okay, so you're doing well with that. Oh, well, I have only in South Carolina store for you, and I'm hoping this might go national, I don't know yet. But I have a friend who has a daughter, a junior in high school, in this little town called Sumter, near here, just like Fort Sumter, right?
Right, right. I'm familiar with it.
Okay. So this is a private school, and it's so funny because it intersects with recent conversations we've had about, well, I've really brought up between the way the integration of the White House and the integration of the public schools is similar in a lot of ways. And I was kind of slow to draw what you were saying, but I couldn't really hear you the other night. So, yeah, they're slow. They're slow to the draw, but also, just like with the Congress and the government, they just like to, you know, tear the game up and start over. Like, they're not even interested in being president because they figured out they have more power. And it's true. They have more. They figured that out, you know, more power in Congress and the House of Representatives. But anyway, the junior in high school, in this private school, now, this is a straight-A student. She just got a STEM scholarship. She's always made straight A's. She's very bright. Not only that, she's large. This girl is like 6 feet tall. She's an athlete. You know, she's going to the Ivy League, like on a full ride, you know, full scholarship. Got to be. That's how bright this child is. So they got a history assignment for a field trip to Gettysburg. And the name of the assignment, though, during this field trip is Recruitment for the Confederacy.
What?
Okay.
What?
Yeah, that's the title. And that freaked me out at first. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt. But then I was informed of what was going to happen. And in writing, they put, don't wear the wrong colors or you might get shot. Okay. Now, you know, I told you, I taught for a couple of years. I substituted before that. I mean, I was a bona fide teacher for 2.5 years. Now, they either you have to get things signed off. You can have a field trip all you want, but it has to be signed off by either the director of student affairs and or the vice principal, the principal, if they have a parent committee. You know, it has to be signed off. So I'm wondering how in the hell did this get all the way up the pipeline, all the way through? Okay, the parents had taken the child out of that school, and it's not cheap.
So is this like, right? Is this some sort of reenactment thing, or thought experiment, or? Well, I mean, can't we just go to Gettysburg and have the name of the lesson be Lee Fucks Up Again?
Well, you see, Bob, you know me. That my first thought was, why are they celebrating losers and traitors? Number one. I mean, I can understand in the context, if you're in college, it's different. You have to be able to take both sides when you're in college and you're writing an essay. Because if you want to write an effective essay, you have to be able to make an argument for both sides.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way I was taught. But this is high school. And these are young people. And this is the South. And you're in a place called something. And if you don't, like, you know, I'm telling you, these people are ready to secede. What the fuck is on their mind? How did that get through?
Oh, I know. You know, what is it? A third of the Republican primary voters felt like Lincoln never should have freed the slaves or some crazy shit like that.
It was some crazy, like, basically, if you distill it, what they were saying was slavery. Okay, it was like Alabama the other day. We were talking, you know, we said you can't have a vehicle if you're on assistance.
Right.
You know, and we saw that movie, and it was called Slavery Wasn't So Bad. It was a job creator, and it's coming to a state near you.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I got another Alabama story for you, Todd.
Uh-oh.
You know that Alabama has a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, Christ-centered, fundamentalist, amosexual governor named Robert Bentley, right? I mean, exactly. Testify. Well, there was some testifying because he got himself into a divorce problem with his wife of like 60 years. I mean, he'd been married forever, 35, 40 years. Seriously, no kidding. And so now there are tape. It turns out that Mrs. Bentley was afraid that Robert was a romping on him.
Holy.
And it turned out he was a romping on her. And we know what a romping means, right?
Good romp.
Yeah, yeah. In flagrante delicto. Latin for bed.
Cow.
Yeah. Horizontal bop, beast with two backs, and doing so with a woman, not his wife.
Uh-oh.
Well, he and his wife went down to their condo down to Gulf Shores, which is like Myrtle Beach, only with white sand, because it's Alabama, it's got to be white. Sorry.
And
so he goes out for a walk along the beach, or no, Mrs. Bentley goes out for a walk along the beach and says, honey lamb, I am going to go out and take a walk along the beach and smell the sweet, salty sea air. Pay no mind to me. I'm just going to be walking on the beach. And turns on her iPhone and sets it to record and leaves. At which point, our upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, traditional family values, marriage-supporting governor calls the girlfriend.
Uh-oh.
And proceeds to talk about how if, he says, honey, if we're going to do that again, we're going to have to lock the door next time. And then he says things like, I love to walk up behind you and put my arms upon your breastises.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's precious. It's absolutely precious, and it's all out there in the media now. I've even got the recording here. As a guy, and, you know, you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but when... And I don't want to be crass or anything or sexist, but when I'm going for a good breast fondle, I got to say, I use my hands, Todd, and not my arms. Because breast fondling with one's arms just seems a little awkward to me.
Well, no, Bob, you have to understand that people have these forearm fetishes.
Really? There's one of those?
It's gotta be. Otherwise, why would you do that? That's what fingertips and lips and everything like that are for. It's ridiculous.
And so then he came out and said, well, I made a mistake 2 years ago, and I've talked about it with my family, and I'm not perfect, just forgiven, and y'all quit talking about it, all right? And no, people aren't stopping talking about it. But then he and the woman with whom he was a-romping, who was not his traditional family values wife, they both said, well, there was some inappropriate conduct, but ain't neither one of us ever had a affair. We was not a-having sex.
Oh, that's bullshit.
So now we've got a Republican hearkening, and here's the fun part. He even invoked Bubba, and you know whom I mean by Bubba.
BC.
Oh, you know it.
How you doing?
You know it.
And, well, you know, they have to pull him into that. And, you know.
And here's the fun, and here's the fun part. The man to whom the woman was traditionally family values, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian married to was the outreach coordinator for Robert Bentley's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives.
You know, at some point we have to realize that, or they have to realize, when I say they, I mean these right-wing Southern Baptist people, all this, and even maybe Catholics, like Northeastern Catholics, all this repression, he puts down all the sexuality, and he gets to do freakish shit. You know,
that's where I was going. These right wingers are some freaks.
They have pushed this shit so far down. They have prolapse of the asshole.
I
say that? I'm sorry, but I'm just like, if you stuff it so much, you've got to do something.
It's got to come out somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's just physics.
But you know, I mean, it's just another day. And once again, all he has to do is, you know, I took it to the Lord in prayer. Meanwhile, Mrs. Bentley saying, "Well, I took it to the circuit court in divorce, divorce."
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. This Southern Baptist thing is such a turnoff to religion. If you're in the Deep South, if you hadn't been here around Southern Baptists, and they control all the political structure just enough. And it's always the First Baptist Church, for some reason, they always were a church where the local power elite go. I don't know how that shit worked out, but it just seems that where every little town I've been to, it seems, you know.
Sometime, Todd, just for the cultural value of it, you need to go over and spend about 6 months in the Shoals area of Alabama, because it's a little bit of an anomaly. Because over there, where I grew up, I was raised in the Southern Baptist Church, but we were a minority religion. because my entire area was ruled by the Church of Christ.
What is it?
Darby Drive, Church of Christ, Woodward Avenue, Church of Christ, Sherrod Avenue, Church of Christ. They tend to name their churches after streets, I think.
Is that like a Pentecostal type of thing?
No. These are their original designation when they were just a little growing cult. They were called Campbellites.
Oh, they read Joseph Campbell before he was born.
No, different Campbell.
Sorry.
No, these are the weirdos that I was talking about the other night that they're hardcore, you know, no dancing and among other things, when they take to singing in their church, they won't use so much as a pitch pipe or a kazoo, and certainly no organ or piano, and it ain't like some Pentecostal church where you got a better band set up than the road tour of the fucking Who. Not so much as a tambourine. They sing everything a cappella, deliciously.
Damn, that sounds depressing.
Oh, it is. And I mean, they sing in keys that only dolphins can hear.
Oh shit! All the dogs are like. Sorry.
They were the majority where I grew up, and that's why the high school I went to. We weren't allowed to have a prom.
Oh man!
Our principal was Church of Christ, and so we were not allowed to have a prom. We were only allowed to have a junior senior banquet.
Okay, I have a quick question. In that culture, you know, some cultures, depending on where you are, the prom is like your first date. For some people,
yeah. Well, it's the white bread quinceanera.
Okay. Right.
It's a rite of passage.
Wow. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like a debutante.
I mean, it was still all tuxes and ball gowns and stuff, but they weren't no dancing. Because you know what? You start dancing, the next thing you know, you're dancing right into the mouth of hail.
Well. Wow, damn!
But no, I get weird Protestantism in the South. No, I speak that language fluently.
Well,
By the way, Carol Baker says, prolapse of asshole. I'm stealing that.
You can have that. No, okay. I'm down with that. Oh, man.
Man, from falafel to romping in the governor's mansion to the Church of Christ in Northwest Alabama. Todd, you're good.
And on the food thing, one more thing. You were talking about Glory. And I used to eat Glory, but I found another brand that I like better. It's called Margaret Holmes.
Oh, I know Margaret Holmes, too. She's good.
Oh, she's good. And there's they have a hummus recipe on there. You can make hummus out of almost any bean.
Oh, sure.
A butter bean.
Ooh, right? Ooh, a butter bean. No, now, damn it. You and I both know what the general non-salutary effects of butter beans are.
Look, sometimes you have to just go with the flow, man. Sometimes you have to be around people who can appreciate it.
Well, right, but if you're going to serve butter bean hummus, you got to have a rule that everybody's going to eat the butter bean hummus.
Exactly. You have to be in butter bean hummus company. Correct.
I mean, nobody can say, no, I think I'll pass on the butterbean hummus tonight and have that and you know, sort of have that parsimonious look on their face looking like they've never farted in their life.
Well, in polite company, I really do like to use the cross between a black bean and the traditional garbanzo.
You ever made black-eyed pea hummus?
Absolutely. I had black-eyed peas today. I had Margaret Holmes just a few hours ago. Let me tell you something. It's seasoned. Right, because they make two kinds. The season, you don't have to do anything. It's not too salty. It's just like grandma made it. It's amazing. They're not paying me. I'm just saying.
No. I had this very frustrating thing that happened to me back at New Year's because, you know, there's a menu on New Year's. To acknowledge my Scots Irish heritage, there's corned beef and cabbage. But there's also
corned beef and cabbage, man. That's the Irish thing, right?
But there's also to acknowledge my Southern poor folks past. There's Hoppin' John, which is made of course.
Oh,
Yeah, you get it.
Right.
And so I was severely bummed out because I went to get my Hoppin' John Makin's over to the Kroger's.
Right.
And do you know they did not have any dry black eyed peas?
They sold out.
Gone.
That private reserve is excellent at Kroger, by the way. You're right.
Yeah, that private selection label's really good. In fact, I've got a package of their. I made grilled cheeses on sourdough with their private selection horseradish white cheddar.
Stop it.
Yeah, that comes kind of good. But me and this one fellow were both down there. He said, "You looking for black eyed peas?" I said, "I am." He said, "Me too." He said, "I wanted the dried ones. I feel like I'm cheating," but he pointed at his basket. He said, "They are some canned ones over there. If you can stand yourself for doing them." And he wasn't kidding, because you know it was like heresy. I'm going to use canned.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to use canned black eyed peas on New Year's Day. What?
Yeah. It's like, don't do it. Don't bother.
But it worked out because they were glory. And they were damn fine.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I believe they are both made. I know the Margaret Holmes, I know, is made in this place called Effingham, which is like almost to Myrtle Beach. It's like in this nice, fertile area. And I think they come from the same area. I think, because you see these signs when you go to the beach for glory.
Pedro. Yeah, you see signs for Pedro south of the border, too, so.
Oh, yeah. So, everybody, don't forget to eat your beans because they're full of nutrition and fiber. And if something happens, you always have some liquid and something to eat.
Well, there we go.
Thanks, Bob. And,
By the way, Devin is warning us off. He's mentioned this before, but do stay away from the Kroger Private Selection pepperoni because it is made with high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, well, yeah, we can't have that.
Yeah, the places that stuff creeps into, that high fructose corn syrup, it'll amaze you, because I'm one of those label readers, and
I heard you say that,
and you look and you get, no, really, son of a bitch.
You know, I didn't know you were in that movement, and I mean, we really have to take a stand, and I know maybe somebody else wants to talk to you. I'm going to take 3 more minutes, maybe, but. This boycott movement. Now, I've been doing that. I didn't really know I was doing it, only because I read Al Haaretz, and you know, where I grew up, I was around Jewish. I mean, when you grow up in the northeastern city, you're around everybody. You're around Muslims. Especially, I worked at the university for 10 years, and then you really meet like people from all over. You know, but beyond that, in the Northeast, you grow up around Jews and Muslims, I mean, different kinds of Muslims, not the brown Muslims that a lot of people think of, because after Bosnia, Philadelphia got a whole lot of, you know, Herzegovina, you know, from the Bosnian War, Muslims from the Balkans. It was a huge influx, right? You know, this Israeli thing, see, folks have to get a little smarter and connect dots and demand things. Because how do you think that the Eastern cultures beyond Israel is going to take us seriously at the negotiating table when they know that we're like 80% for Israel and like 20% for what the Palestinians are talking about? But in fact, Israel is one of the few civilized, quote unquote, that's the wrong word, one of the few countries that belongs to all the major accreditation networks, let's call them, like the UN and the G10 and all this nonsense, right? Now, that is the only country that defies UN sanctions consistently, and nobody says anything about it.
Yeah, right.
This stealing of land, all this fucking, it's like you have a pizza. You go to get a guy, you go and get a pizza. You know what it is. We're all getting high, getting beer, we're going to get pizza. We got one pizza, and 3 people chip in, or whatever you chip in, and we're going to split this pizza up. And then people start eating it on the way home, and there's like 3 slices left. And then one person says, "Oh no, this is mine." I'm like, "Fuck you! It's not yours."
No, my God gave it to me.
Well, yeah, but it's in my right. So figure that out. But that's a terrible analogy. But that's, you know, it's the quick and dirty of it.
I don't know if you're aware of this, and this story, I don't know if anything's come of it, but a story out of the UK from the middle of February that I've had laying around for a while. The government in the UK announced that a plan whereby all publicly funded institutions will lose the freedom to refuse to buy goods and services from companies involved in the arms trade, fossil fuels, tobacco products, or Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. That's local councils, public bodies, even some university student unions would be banned from boycotting unethical companies.
Okay. Okay, is this piggybacking on that movement that started maybe with the kids like Dartmouth and Yale and
right, and it
Harvard,
and it's it, and it's
divest,
you know, and it's across board, it's across the right? pond too, yeah. Right?
Hello.
Yeah, yeah, and it's happening in Europe as well. But the government's ban would have outlawed council action against apartheid South Africa. Ministers talk about devolution, but in practice they're imposing Conservative Party policies on elected local councils across the board. So, you know, it's not just here. And when and you know, when Hillary goes to AIPAC and says that that there's something nasty about the BDS movement, well, she's not alone. And Devin says, "Well, that bill is coming to the United States too." And
one more thing.
I'm sorry, what?
We're breaking up a little bit, but you know, Benjamin Netanyahu is a fraud, number one, and most of the people in Israel do not like him, and most Americans do not take the time to read Israeli press.
Well, I don't know that we can say that most of the people in Israel don't like him because they keep electing him.
Well, I'll put it this way. Just like we have a far left and a far left and a far right and somewhere in the middle, they do also, but he is really far right, and most people in Israel are not far right. See, I don't think it's the Israelis that like the apartheid system, but the way they're sitting, they don't have a democracy like we have. So it's harder for them to do anything about it. But I do remember Democracy Now, maybe about 2 years ago, there were two Israeli pilots that basically they gave up their duties. It was a male and a female. They said, "We're stopping and we're blowing the whistle on the war on Gaza." And they blew the whistle. And, you know, all that stuff is archived from Democracy Now. And I think if you just Google Democracy Now and defecting, they didn't defect, but they gave up their duty. And, you know, just like the American Air Force only takes, you know, you have to be of a certain caliber of person, you know, you have to be really good, high IQ. Or like Donald Trump, you have to have a good brain. Who the fuck says that? I have a good brain. No, seriously. I mean, what, at some point...
I have a good brain, and my fingers are not short.
I have a good brain. I should be president. Do you mean to say that my intellect is such that I don't need to get to consult with anyone about foreign affairs? Or you mean, I just got a good brain? What the fuck?
No, it's a great brain. It's a beautiful brain.
Sorry. That shit just got me, man. I was, you know, Mr. Foie Gras. You know what? They need to drag his ass around one of those medieval little carriages with the bars on it, like do with the prisoners.
Oh, you mean I think that's called a tumbril, isn't it?
I don't know. You just told me. A tumbril. Right. Yeah, I know what it looks like. It has the wooden wheels on it. I can visualize it right now. It's got the little ugly green floor in it. And Donald Trump's inside, and they're force-feeding him until he just bursts. And then everyone just gets covered by his ilk.
You know what? I'll take a pass on that last part.
You'd be smart to do that. Hey, Bob, I hope you have a great evening, and you're doing a great job, and everyone's contributing.
Well, we've made tremendous progress this evening, and it's all thanks to a lot of really, really determined, good-hearted people, and it makes all the difference in the world.
Well,
it's been an awesome conversation, Todd, and I appreciate it. I mean, hell, I always enjoy me some food porn, and Now I'm definitely curious about the Triscuit falafel. Yeah.
You won't, you know, just go all out, get the I can make my own pita bread now. I got the bread machine, so it helps make the dough because I don't like the meat.
Ooh, you make your own pita?
Oh hell, it's so easy. Oh my god, man! You know what? Everybody needs a full set of heavy cast iron skillets. It's amazing what you can do on top of a stove.
Oh, I've got a little flat cast iron griddle, and I love it.
Get it really hot. Flour up that bread, right? Get your dough, flour it up. And the trick is to just let it get heated, but so hot on each side. You have to make, you know, you can do probably two of one, two small ones with it. I have a griddle that covers two burners. I'll never forget, I got it at Macy's for $10. Man, that's what I miss about the city. Oh, I love Macy's. $10 cast iron skillet. It's got the ridges on one side and it's a flat griddle with the reservoir edge on it, you know, all the way around. Covers two burners. You flatten out your dough. So anyway, you know, you can't beat fresh baked bread. So I'll do some bread for it next time I come to you because I'm doing sourdough now.
Ooh. What are you doing for your sourdough, Todd?
Well, I got a recipe. I'm doing the free. I don't know what I call it. Free range. You let the natural yeast get to it. And this is a good time. There's a lot of shit in the air right now. You know. So you put the cheesecloth. You get rye, but you got to start with rye. You know, you got to spelt rye, whole wheat, all organic.
I was going to ask because I've got a little sourdough trick, and you know, some people will sprinkle some yeast in there just to get it started. I don't do it. But you're right, whole wheat, organic flour, rye, something like that. But then some whole germ cornmeal. Like you can get, because that part is just loaded with natural yeasts.
I didn't know that. I'm gonna do that.
And so flour and some, I mean, this can't be like, you know, store-bought cornmeal. It's got to be cornmeal that, like, you know, somebody nearby is grinding.
There's a place like that about 10 miles away. Yeah, the grist, fresh grist is cornmeal, like in a sack.
Yeah, well, Anson Mills of South Carolina is great for this stuff, but we've got people around here that grind cornmeal. But that and, you know, a little sprinkling of sugar just to get stuff fed,
right.
and warm water to make a slurry, and then add into that a little bit of whole live culture buttermilk.
Oh man.
So that you get that lactobacillus thing going on.
Oh, I'm big on that. Yeah.
And you know, you go from there and you get it live and you get it kicking and then you put it, you know, put a cup of it in a bowl and add more stuff in it and put it in the oven with the, you know, just
could
with
I
the
cheat with regular yogurt?
Yeah, probably. I just like buttermilk better.
Right. Well, yeah, you can't go wrong with buttermilk.
But then, you know, once you've got a good mess of it going, like, for overnight, make pancakes with it.
Damn it, Bob. That's what I was about to say. I swear to God.
The smell of those pancakes, Todd, will perfume. The smell of those pancakes on that cast iron griddle will perfume the whole neighborhood, and people will just weep at the aroma.
Listen, you think I'm kidding? The reason I'm doing the sourdough is because by accident, I got a friend. She likes to ferment everything, and she makes kimchi. Not kimchi, but it's a beverage you can get. It's like fermented.
I know what you're talking about. Was it kombucha or?
Kombucha, right. She makes her own kombucha all the time, right? And she makes sourdough, so sometimes I get started from her. She's always giving me stuff. But
now, sometime if you want to get in touch with your inner hillbilly, get in touch with me, and I'll dig up my grandmother's old recipe for what is called salt rising bread.
Okay. I'll do that.
Stinkingest stuff you ever smelled in your life. But
I'm telling you.
Once you've had it, you don't care. It is just that amazing.
I know you appreciate food like I do. Bob, I hope you have a great evening. And everybody, please continue to support Bob, because Bob is doing a great job for himself and everyone else.
Well, thank you, Todd. Thank you kindly.
No problem.
All right. You have yourself a good evening.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Todd down in South Carolina stand. Now we run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I got you, Mark. What's happening?
I got you, Lima Charlie about 3x3. I apologize. We're getting a little. I'm looking at the skies lighting up over on the east coast of Florida from about 80 miles away. I can see that from a distance, so I apologize.
That's okay. It may be my fault, Mark.
Well, you know, Bob, you're so valuable. It's never your fault, because we all need your contribution to keep things going. I just I wanted to call the show about the one gentleman that mentioned Dwight David Eisenhower.
Kevin up in Connecticut.
What's his first name, Bob?
Kevin.
You know, I couldn't copy that, but the gentleman from Connecticut. I would just say that I agree with what he was trying to say, and he is right. Speaking, but I think, and I can't put words in Dwight David Eisenhower's mouth, but I would ask him to continue the pursuit of excellence into the truth, and know that Eisenhower. I had a contemporary that got a Medal of Honor in World War II named David M. Shoup, S-H-O-U-P. Shoup grows up in, I think, Greenwood, Indiana. He had to know who Eugene Debs was. And if you read what David M. Shoup, who was John F. Kennedy's JCS, like the current JCS is a U.S. Marine, so was John F. Kennedy's. And David M. Shoup, Medal of Honor winner, actually as a young lieutenant, worked for another Marine who got a couple of Medal of Honors, which usually kill you with half a one, in his career, and that was none other than Smedley Butler. So
right.
Smedley Butler, the son of a Quaker abolitionist, who was used, and of course our audience, Bob, understands that, was used to try to overthrow the Roosevelt administration. But before that happened, that did not occur. So David M. Shoup and Dwight David Eisenhower maybe kind of ran with the governor on the break, slightly engaged, because they knew who their real bosses were. And I'm not correcting the gentleman from Connecticut directly, but if to take into consideration the military-industrial complex and the CIA are not necessarily the same thing. One of them has a classified budget, and one of them has a somewhat open budget.
Yeah, so, a semi-public budget.
Right, semi-public budget, and, you know, the War Department back in the day. So, you know, Eisenhower may have been trying to tell the public that maybe his own life felt threatened. And a year or two later from that speech, his boss's life was taken. So maybe that was his call for help, possibly, huh? How about he was telling America, I'm under the gun. I understand what I'm up against. I can't really say it's the Dulles brothers, Sean Foster and Alan Dulles, and Mellon Banks, and I can't say who it is, but I'm under the gun, and if I call it out directly, they'll kill me. And the next guy knew who it was before he got the job, and they did kill him. And we suffered nothing different than Guatemala. We had a coup d'etat here in the United States. And regardless of your age, well, your age, I guess, could be part of an interpretation of it, considering some of us. But the point is, we're no different than Guatemala. And
not anymore.
We really never have been. When they killed John F. Kennedy and they killed his replacement, Bobby, and they killed Martin Luther King concerning the same subject, it all evolved around Vietnam. So Eisenhower, the military-industrial complex, and the CIA and the CIA and big business, and the Marines' first shootouts for all the General Schwarzkopf in the audience, and all the Rambos and the Schwarzeneggers and the Rambos. But the first shootouts that Marines had in 1965 were in Michelin rubber plantations. And who were they shooting it out with? With the people that were working at the rubber plantation. They weren't the NVA. They were just workers, and they happened to be probably organized workers, if I were to guess. So this is where we're at. This is where we've always been, and Americans don't really have the knowledge or courage, other than the people who listen to the show in general, to stick up for themselves. And it's understandable. It's a scary country, and Donald Trump's an anchor baby. I got to go, Bob. I just wanted to say you don't have to be a Mexican to be an anchor baby, and I appreciate you being there every night. And David M. Shoup, S-H-O-U-P, if people want to look that up, Medal of Honor winner, worked with Medley Butler, and they killed his boss and shut him up. So anyway,
thanks for all the information, Mark. It's always a joy talking to you, and I hope you have a wonderful evening. Maybe don't get hit by those storms.
All right, Bob, I'm going to continue listening. I'm just getting out of the line of fire.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Okay.
Our buddy Mark calling from somewhere in Florida. Yes. This has been a Jim Dandy evening. Remarkable conversations, but that's one of the special things that y'all have created here. There are almost always remarkable conversations. And, you've created something that no one else has. And for that, I am always, always grateful and thankful. And I want to thank everyone who has helped to keep us on the air this evening. Thank you, Strongman. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Janice. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you to Robert and Philip and Wesley and Janie. Thank you, one and all. Because, getting into a $685 hole is pretty frightening when you've got, I wish there was some way to magically make this happen without it, but there isn't. So all I can do is thank you. And thank you for however you participate in the program in oh so many ways. This is not your average talk radio by any stretch of the imagination. You know, we few, we happy few. Well, we're not exactly a few. But you're part of a small and committed group who are actually trying to, sometimes we just sit and complain. But other times we look for solutions. And the only way you start looking, the only way you look for solutions is by asking questions first. And sometimes the questions themselves are not pleasant to ask. But here, we have at least the courage to ask them. And whether you realize it or not, in the current climate in this country, that makes this that you have built a rarity indeed. So I will thank you all for a particularly energizing and exciting and enjoyable Thorn in the Side Thursday. I will invite you all back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. We're so glad you're home, Gene and Ann. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.